we please switch off our cellular phones? Please. Let's switch off our cellular phones so that they don't disturb us. Welcome, comrades. And I'm looking this side, on the right hand side, that we hopefully have heard that one of our colleagues has passed away. I'm sure that the necessary proper announcements will be made in the house today, but we just cannot ignore that. It's one of those things. Once again, please let's make sure our cellular phones are off so that they should not disturb us. Comrade Deputy Minister, welcome. And I'm sure congratulations are still in order. I don't know what the arrangement is, whether we must finish quickly so you can go back to the Public Enterprise Committee to continue what you were busy with, or you are now on the other side now.
I'm done.
Oh, I see. Okay. Well, Comrade Deputy Minister and DG, this is not a new meeting. It is a follow-up meeting. And I think all the engagements that we've had since the beginning of this year, we were trying to just tie the loose ends on all the engagements we've had last year. Because a once-off engagement, you raise issues that must be followed up, that must be tied down. You then do need to have a follow-up meeting to say, well, let's tie the loose ends so that we're sure that the issues are properly closed. So I think this meeting comes in that particular context. We had our engagement, I think, around August last year, around the issue of the integrated financial management system, which government had hoped that by now it would be operational to try and close some of the gaps that exist in how the state is run, to try and bring integration, to try and bring uniformity around very critical areas of human resource, finances, supply chain, but which has not progressed as smoothly as was anticipated. I also hope, DG, that maybe issues around deviations and expansions, we may want to just reflect on our observations in our engagement with the Office of the Chief Procurement. I always struggle with that name. OCP. Office of the Chief Procurement Officer. You see now. CPO. we had an engagement with them, as you know. And then had an engagement with Transnet. Just took Transnet as a sample on it. And I think there are some few observations that we've made that we would take advantage of your presence here to say, look, ABCD, I think so. But in the main, it is around the IFMS. Now, today's session will be slightly different, DG, in the sense that we'll allow you to talk to us briefly and say, this is what I've done in relation to the issues that were raised and were agreed needed to be done. And then hopefully we can then, all things being equal, and then call it quits, and we'll all be satisfied that at least that part has been tied up. I don't have to explain the importance of the IFMS. Very strategic. I think amongst the many programs that government had in mind, this should have been the priority, because getting this one right then lays the base and the foundation to get everything else right. Now, getting this one wrong means the ability of government to get all other things right then gets disrupted and gets delayed. And you know very well that the National Treasury is our ally. Every time we're hearing National Treasury is on our side, assisting us to get things right. So it can't be that our ally, you know, I'm looking for a word, but in my language, it must not be like a willow tree. Meaning you mustn't go and clean out there and yet your own nest is not clean. Yeah. So so I think that's where we're at. So what I'll do now, I'll hand over to you. We'll not do the normal introduction. The only stranger has been introduced. The rest of us, I think we more or less know each other, having interacted before. So I'll hand over to you. I'll not necessarily want us to go line by line, and I'm deliberately not complaining that you're handing over this document to us now, and we're therefore robbed of the opportunity to go through them, study them, and even research the responses that you're giving, so that we can have meaningful engagement. Otherwise, you tell us, and then we can't respond to this information because we have not had the opportunity to interact with it. I would want to overlook that and say, let's go into it and let's engage, and we'll take it up from there. And then I think, Comrade Deputy Minister, when we, at the end, we'll certainly give you a few minutes to respond to any issues that might have been raised that you may want the political level to respond to. But let me give the DG, when he's done, Comrade Boy, where is Lengwa? I don't see him yet. But I'll start with the two of you, and then we can then proceed. DG?
Thank you very much. Good morning, honorable members. Thank you for the opportunity to present the progress report to you on this important project that the Treasury is overseeing. And Chair, I agree with you that it is important that we clear, and that was the spirit of the last meeting on this matter when we were here, that we are saying simply that in your own household, things are not in order, clear them so that when you go out, you are not, you know, stones are not thrown back to you. And it's in that spirit that we approach this project, and actually the progress is obviously based on the broad understanding. When we were here the last time, the committee picked up on a number of things, and we listed those issues in slide 2 in terms of what exactly the issues were. There were issues around, at the time, one particular, call it a service provider who was part of the project management team, and you know, in terms of the report, and as this was a project built by SCOF at the time and SCOA, we did submit the report insofar as this particular entity's concerned. In particular, it was around the length of the project, the kind of project that they, and when this particular company started in the treasure and so on, and that report is available for scrutiny as and when it is needed by this committee. There was also an issue about the finalization of the forensic investigation into IFMS, because at the time when you looked at the 54 findings, at the end of it, it was clear that a forensic investigation has to be undertaken, and again, we want to report progress on that one and say we have appointed a service provider. The investigation is currently underway. The audit committee obviously looked at the initial process, and we can explain that. But what I can say now on that is that the service provider was appointed, work started already. We expect that this report will be available on the 30th of April. That's the end date of this forensic report. And somewhere in the slides I'm saying that as soon as it's available, it will be submitted to you, it will be submitted to all other parliamentary committees, including SCOF and SCOA, including the Hawks and the Public Protector, because also the Public Protector had a direct interest in this IFMS matter. We have been engaging with that office, and the Hawks also had a direct interest in the matter, and we have also been engaged with them, and we promise them as soon as this report is available, it will be made available to them. There was an issue about the appointment of permanent staff in the OEG office IFMS unit, because at the time, you'll remember that I had indicated in the committee that I will at that time relieve some officials of the responsibilities of IFMS. Immediately after the committee meeting here the last time, we immediately acted on the promise that we made to the committee, appointed acting people, and immediately started putting adverts out for permanent employees to be appointed, and interviews obviously have been conducted, and staff of the actual unit will be appointed. What we also picked up, and obviously through the help and the focus that you made, is that ICT in the Treasury, not only in government, ICT has been is fragmented in many ways. There are about five or so units that deal with ICT-related matters, and there's a need for us to bring all of that together under one roof, including creation of a unit in the Treasury that's only looking at big stuff, including central supplier database, e-tender portal, IFMS, Logis, BES, currently all of them when that is the way it is, it clearly tells you that as we interact with the whole of government, especially on the rollout that the Department of Public Service Administration through CETA is running, it becomes very fragmented, and as a result, we don't get the benefits of actually consolidating all the experience that we have and consolidate them as one. So this process in the last few months helped us also to identify that need, and we will be at a very high speed ensuring that all of these units, including how we interact with DPSA and the IFMS steering committee, because also that was an issue that we picked up at the time, that the steering committee was there by name, if you remember, it was not functional. I must hasten to say that the steering committee is functional. It has met two times already in the last couple of months, and the next meeting, I think, it's set sometime for this 30 April. So it is functional, that oversees the broader project from beginning to end 2021 financial year. You will remember, Chair, that we also at the time committed, and I said to the committee that with immediate effect I had suspended, I think it was a day or so before you came here, that we had suspended all IFMS-related payments. It took a while because I had to be comfortable that we clean one, the systems of payment that the 54 findings picked up, the internal controls that were there, and what was big at the time, that some payments, if you remember, were payments without proper authorization. So what we did was that stop all payments. I want all payments to be personally dealt with by the CFO and personally dealt with by the internal audit function, and in the form of the chief audit executive, Mr. Siperepere, next to me. Now, we focused on that, and that was, I'm comfortable that we, after reviewing the payment process, all payments now are clearly sanctioned by the internal audit function, including the necessary protocols, and not only rely on the IFMS team to sign off, Because if you do merge, you become a referee and a player at the same time. It's a bit problematic. And then at the end, the only time you pick up is when the payment is already made. So we have put all those controls that the internal audit report that dealt with, well, we've picked up, and then I'm comfortable that all of that now is in place, and I'm happy that we are able to, we know what we are paying is the right payment. There's also now there's also an issue. You remember that the committee also raised an issue about the previous forensic investigation that Deloitte ran, and we at the time we didn't hide that from the committee. We said to you, there is a forensic process. Unfortunately, that process is going to, it's not going to go on. The draft report has got issues because, as you remember, that was an audit committee process that was run because management was a stakeholder. So you could not on your own, again, be a referee and a player at the same time. So that process obviously was run by the forensic audit committee of the National Treasury. And then as a result of, through another process, we were able to appoint a service provider that I said the report will be available in at the beginning. So, Chair, that just as per the issues that we picked up from the meeting and that I'm saying we are able to act on, and we are able to act on in a way that puts certainty that what we're paying, one, is payments that I can stand behind and say the systems are in place, and I'm comfortable that those systems are in place. And you said, Chair, I shouldn't go through all the slides. Yes, I'm not going to go through that, but I just thought maybe to also raise an issue that came up. And if you remember, the last time we were here also, in the committee meeting and room, the Auditor General was in the room. They had an issue, and they also had an interest in the matter because it was at the time when the audit process were being finalized, and there was an issue in particular about irregular payments that finally became as part of the internal audit. The AG report of the National Treasury 16-17 in terms of their opinion. Now, in particular, the audit opinion covered ICT works, and insofar as the work and the payment of licenses is concerned. And again, ICT works was the only company that was taken over from IFMS 1 to IFMS 2, if you remember. And at the time, the justification was that there was a legal process that concluded on this understanding that says one, ICT works works should not go to tender because clearly they were part of the bigger project, and through that legal settlement, then they can carry on IFMS 2 work. To do what they have to do. In terms of this particular aspect, internal audit obviously acted. We acted promptly, requested that there must be a forensic investigation in particular in terms of this particular matter. In the interest of good governance, the audit committee was also assigned to oversee the investigation process, and issues raised has been addressed by management and closely monitored by the internal audit committee, and as and when any wrongdoings identified, we'll have to deal with. So, secondly, there was an issue about Oracle licenses that will obviously have to take corrective steps to once the investigation is concluded, and that we should be able to ensure that what we paid is in a most cost-effective way. And at the time, and even the point that you made through to the audit to the Auditor General was that we had two options and two choices so far as payments are concerned. One is if in terms of termination of IFMS 1, you are supposed to pay 793 million versus a settlement that says for the duration of the work and the project, pay 300. At the time, the then management obviously decided to go the cheaper route, but however, that's an issue that we had with the Auditor General, but it's a matter that remains an issue that the Auditor General raised as an emphasis of matter, and that what we then do, without arguing that further and arguing that we were right, because the Auditor General has passed an opinion on it, and it's an opinion that we must respect, is then to regularize the IC2X work, settlement that was taken to ensure that we regularize the payment and then enter into a new contract that reflects the 383 million and the work thereof. And we also, because the settlement also said to ICT works can then, based on as and what needed, they can do other related ICT works in the treasury, and we are using them also for other related matters around central supplier database and logis and best enhancement when needed. So that issue is again something that is critical for you to note. Slide 6, I'm simply saying there's a forensic investigation and the timelines are there, and we are obviously able to say we expect that the audit committee report, insofar as this is concerned, should be available to us in the first week of May, because they've got until 30 April to present the findings. And as I said, this will be submitted to everyone, including the public protector, yourself, and the Hawks. Now, slide 7, I'm just flagging the role of internal audit. It remains an important function. We've strengthened that function because we thought without, as management, without a strong internal audit function, we can also close shop. So what we did now of late is that we have recently approved a consortium of extra support in terms of internal audit to strengthen that unit, so that unit is properly strengthened in a way that you can then do more than just your usual day-to-day functions as internal audit. So we have strengthened that unit by bringing extra capacity in the form of consultants who are ready, who can come in as and when needed on specific functions. And in particular, we obviously chose your smaller firms that are beginning to make their mark in the space. And so we that's how we'll be approaching strengthening that office. Now, what I thought also is important, Chair, is then to then take the committee through what's left now. What is the process from now onwards? And we picked a date, and we started working on this, obviously, last year, November 2017, to date, to say, what then is the day-to-day? What then are we doing in reaching, ensuring that we reach the deadline of 2021? Because come 2021, this process should be completed. We should have rolled out IFMS in the way that we should, and that target date is still in place. We're not going to actually actually change our view on that. The software agreements, we've completed slide 11. We've completed the contractual agreement with Oracle on the software, so that is behind us. Phase 2 of the project focus on the development generic template that will be used for implementation and rollout, identifying lead size and pilot size, and out of there we've got obviously 3 sub-phases, and again that is ongoing currently as we speak. We are in the process of designing and developing the template, and then again it's ongoing currently, and we hope by 2018 November we would have done all of those aspects that are listed in slide 7 under 2A. Under 2B, we hope at that time we would have again. All of this is, we've got Pillar here who's the program head, who's running with this thing together with the steering committee, that those deadlines, the implementation of this is obviously monitored by the steering committee, including regular feedback and regular rollout feedback on various sites that we've identified. Phase 3, obviously again in slide 12, we identified where the long-term planning is, how are we going to approach certain key departments and differentiate them, in particular in defense and subs, and including other service delivery related departments. And then finally, Chair, I'm giving you the cost to date. Like we indicated at the time when we met you, we said in 2016-17 we had spent 1.2 billion, and that was the total cost at the time. We did not, it's the same number that we identified to you. To date, in terms of where we are, remember that the IFMS budget is not a 2 billion rand sitting somewhere and available to spend. As the budget is presented in February, the budget of IFMS then is obviously reflected in the National Treasury budget. Now, for 17-18 financial year, the total budget allocated for this financial year is 352 million. And we've got the breakdown of the cost there, including where and how the money is used, including payment of software licenses and other and other responsibilities, you know, around paying SIDA and paying where to host and maintain the website, and also for purposes of consulting that they use, where we service the work that SIDA is doing for us on insofar as IFMS is concerned. So to date, we also made some commitments, meaning before end of financial year, you will see that you know, payments to, you know, for licenses, including hosting SIDA payments and Oracle license payments, will obviously go through 87 million. So that's basically the state of affairs. I gave the committee four aspects of the presentation. I took the committee on issues that we agreed that needed to be reported on. I took the committee through work that we are and things that we promised and that we have delivered on. I've also taken you through around the implementation program to date. And finally, I also told you the amount we've spent to date on the IFMS rollout. And I'm all finally saying that the steering committee, IFMS steering committee, that's comprised of ourselves, CIT and DPSA, is on top of what we are doing, and we think we'll still maintain the deadline and make sure that the deadline of 2021 is met in the IFMS rollout. And finally, all issues around the poor controls that were identified as per our last conversations have been dealt with. And finally, the strengthening of the process, IFMS work in the Treasury, it has been strengthened in terms of the oversight role, one that you play, including the kind of focus that we need to give to internal audit to actually ensure that they keep a hawk eye on the project itself and its implementation and finalization through to 2021. Thank you very much.
Right. Thank you very much. So we can end the engagement here. I think you have spoken to almost all the issues that we had spoken to last year. Thanks very much. it's a pity we didn't have this earlier on, but I'm sure, comrades, we have listened. But let me hand over to Comrade Boy to lead our charge, so to speak.
Don't use those harsh words, sir. You'll make the deputy minister to fire me. But thank you for coming. And thank you for the effort you put in, sir. But I would start where the last minister left us. We had concern about the Office of the Procurement, that this process that they are running, you have not been involving the office, the procurement people, to be able to help you to assist in procuring these processes that they're talking to. What have you thought about that one? But I don't see them here, so it means that they're outside this project. This project you are running it yourself without going through the necessary criteria that are used when procurement is being used. That's my first question. But the minister has committed that they will use procurement to assist with these processes. APASCOS.
Why don't we have a response to that?
Okay.
Then you can have follow-ups also.
Thank you. I think, thanks, Honorable Way, for that question. Then, when you don't see them, it doesn't mean they are not part of it. The engagement of the CPO, if you remember, it was insofar as ensuring that all companies that are part of the project management office were properly, one, procured, that there are no issues about their procurement, and two, that their own the payments thereof are in line with the contract that they were signed. So that is something that I'm comfortable with in terms of their input to that process. That one, they were able to verify and confirm that your ABACAS, your ICTWX, and all other service providers who were part of the IFMS project were properly procured, and that all payments were in line with the contractual obligations and arrangements. So that's why they would come in as and when they are needed like that. But in overseeing the day-to-day management of the project, the CPO will not necessarily be part of this because it's more the implementation and the rollout of the program.
I thought, I don't know if you want to make a follow-up, I thought, and unless you want to clarify that further, that the OCPO has an interest and gets involved when procurements at a particular level of amount is involved. And the concern was, whilst they have an eye on everybody else, but it appears that when National Treasury itself is engaged in these processes, that same office is not involved. I don't think it was necessarily limited to this review that we're doing, that once that is done, then they can go back and focus elsewhere and have nothing to do with National Treasury. I don't know if I'm amplifying it correctly.
You see the interest, DG. It's holding you accountable. And what we have been able to establish is that the Treasury overall doesn't keep to its own structures. So the involvement of the OCPO was to be able to signal that to us that they themselves are taking full responsibility of following up all the procurement processes. So that not you directly, but your whole institution is accountable to the structures created. So with the non-availability or with this spontaneous arrangement with OCPO, it says to us, you don't want to be accountable to that particular structure. Because you remember, we always say that our motive and our understanding is that you should be exemplary to other departments. So you can't be saying to them that hold them responsible, while internally in National Treasury they are being handled now and then as of needs arise. You see, it sets a little bit not of a good precedent. That has been our expression of our concern, that why wouldn't they be full-time so that they can be able, so that you are not involved, they can come to you and report back to you to say that all the procurement processes in terms of how we have defined them have been followed. That report and that type of a relationship would augur well for all of us. But the one that is at a distance, you then must hear what is happening. And when you want to ask questions, you must always get you to come and answer. Only find out, you could have easily called procurement and said, tell us how these procurement processes are going on. There's too many rumors, DG, and we don't want to keep you here, you see. But at least procurement, you can always find them coming here and say to them, we hear these things are taking place. Is there a true reflection of how the department is being run? That has been our concern, on top of what the chairperson is doing. That's why we're saying, get procurement in, so that we don't hear that Abascus, or we don't hear Oracle, or we don't hear so-and-so is running the department, or is running IFMS on its own thinking without following the necessary procurement process. That has been where we were really concerned. That's why I'm raising that question, Chair.
No, thank you very much, Honorable. I think it's important. We're not saying they shouldn't have been here, but you know, maybe in the way that we understood what we need to report on was maybe not clearly understood. But because the question is more general and not only focused on this, I, as an accounting office of the National Treasury, also write to the CPO to request certain things insofar as the delegations are concerned. Because the checks and balances are in the system. I, insofar as I'm concerned as an accounting officer, I relate to the CPO. As an example, if I ask for a deviation, I'm not saying I grant myself a deviation. I write to the chief procurement office and request, and half the time, in most cases, they say, no, you can't. So all the checks and balances are in place. And all the checks and balances in terms of them overseeing as a request, whether from SCOPA or from SCOA, to do any check on processes by the National Treasury, they are available to do that. And actually, I would even hasten to say, Chair, we can even ask them that they give us an independent view as a report that comes to you on the matters that are being discussed, so that you understand that we are not holding back or maybe protecting ourselves in any way. The issue here, I think, they are an office established. The delegations were given long time ago from the DG of the Treasury to the CPO in terms of his functions and or her functions, depending as to who you appoint finally. That's an institution that is created.
I think, DG, at that conceptual level, we're in agreement. I think the point was raising was the issue of the OCPO. Please, can you refine this thing and make it simple? When it was raised, and I think when you were also just like the minister, too new, so to speak, and were going to rectify these things, and you involved them. I think what is raising is that as part of the feedback to say we have sorted things out, we would have loved to have had that feature prominently. You know, that one of the gaps that we realized was that office has been left out. Now, as part of getting things right, here they are, you know. I think that would have allayed those concerns. Yes, comrade.
It's always important to hold even the executive accountable. But his comments were made by the former minister when he made his concluding remarks that we are going to deal with this matter in this particular way. The OCPO would be involved in the project itself. That's what he told us, you see. We have spoken to the Deloitte issue, which the minister said he had asked the DG to report this to IRBA. Have you been able to report the matter or what has happened to that particular issue?
Thank you, Chair. I have had discussions with IRBA in SPA instructions from the minister. IRBA indicated that this is a matter that doesn't belong to them. And I'm putting it on record in terms of my conversation with the IRBA. It's not a matter that belongs to them. It is they are the wrong body. What I then did was then to internally in the Treasury, including the Audit Committee, including Deloitte, engaged with them, Deloitte directly, in terms of the issue and in terms of the understanding that must emerge around this particular matter, that made sure that the minister reports or confirms that they must be reported. So those engagements continued, you know, for the better part of the 6 months, last 6 months, and we can talk to that again when we specifically answer questions around the forensic and why we closed. We decided to terminate the relationship with Deloitte, and the Audit Committee Chair can obviously speak to that. She did mention it before in the last meeting, and then we can then focus on the final report, the forensic report that has to be taken into account.
We'll keep it there, that you'll come back to it. But could you speak to part of the consequences of all the people that we had identified at that particular moment? As a committee, we don't pass a judgment. Would have expected you to have given us a detailed reflection of how far you've gone with the Hawks, so that we can take your report and compare it to the Hawks about what has happened around this old debacle, all security agencies.
Thank you very much, Mavoy. I think our view and our approach to that matter, because we did not want to continue casting aspersions to individuals without without something tangible that I can use. So what we did, we then said it is important. That's why I said once the forensic investigation report is available, that will be, one, we will act on it as a department in terms of individuals or whoever is identified as having committed any crime or wrongdoing or acted in a corrupt way, manner. Two, we will submit that to you. Three, we will submit it to the Hawks and to the public protector. As I said, they are also interested parties, and we have engaged with them on these two matters. So they are also in an investigative phase in terms of trying to find out what could have happened in terms of the project itself. And what I didn't say, Chair, which is important, is that we expanded, and actually we should, Laura, make available the terms of reference as early as this afternoon to the committee. We expanded the terms from the original focused 54 findings to a much, much more elaborate, including the time period, and not only focus on a particular period, so that we all are comfortable that this project, there's proper checks on this project. And that's why I think we thought it would be prudent for us to act only when the forensic investigation report is available.
Right. Okay.
My last one on the comments of the minister is about the consultants. You said you're going to reduce the number of consultants. How far have you gone on that one?
The consultants have been reduced. I mean, in fact, Phila, correct me. What we have done, all the consultants that were part of the project management office, PMO, Abacus included, and others, we stopped. In fact, we didn't stop. The contract that came to an end, we did not extend one. We did not renew, because it was at that point where I said we are relooking at the project, the payment systems, trying to actually streamline all our systems based on the internal audit findings and the corrective measures that that the internal audit came up with. So we don't have any, your Abacus is not there anymore. Sorry, can I ask Lesego from internal audit just through, with your permission, just to indicate what we have done, because I know certainly we have not renewed or even focused or extended any of those contracts.
Okay.
Thank you very much, DG. indeed, it is correct. The group of consultants that were basically included in the project office that were in the panel are all subject to the forensic investigation that is currently going on. So we are no longer utilizing the services of the likes of Abacus, KPMG, there's a total of about 8 companies that were in that panel. Majority of them have exhausted their budget in as far as the costs that were allocated for that panel is concerned. So all of them are currently not being utilized. There are other measures that the head of the IFMS can talk to that we are using to utilize other companies that are there, like the DG has alluded to, the ICT Works and others. But the companies that were in the panel that are subject to the forensic investigation are all no longer being utilized as things stand.
Can I pose a follow-up question, DG? With your respect.
Sure.
You are saying that they have exhausted their money, and Abacus is part of that, and that then automatically took them out of the system. Not that you have suspended them.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have Oracle, from what we hear, DG, which was first given a particular responsibility. But because the ICT Works couldn't deliver on that particular responsibility, Oracles have taken over. Is the truth in this type of analysis in relation to what we have been raising? But this is what we are hearing now, that ICT Works couldn't continue doing design, and then Oracles had to come in. And Oracles in itself has not found any basis for itself for that. What type of work are they doing within the department or around this particular project? This is what we are being fed.
No, I think we obviously need to put matters into context. ICT Works were responsible for the PMM module in IFMS 1. This specific module is one module that is continued to be utilized even in the treasury environment as we speak. So when Oracle was appointed to take over the systems manufacturing responsibilities in IFMS 2, the license costs that we were paying ICT Works, because the module that ICT Works was responsible for in PMM in IFMS 1 was an Oracle module. We merged the payments of those licenses, so we no longer pay licenses separate to ICT Works for PMM. When we concluded the contract with Oracle, those licenses were incorporated into the bigger Oracle contract that we now have in IFMS 2. And I think that is the context that we must explain. And as the DG explained earlier, in the negotiating of the ICT works contract from IFMS 1, we had a settlement agreement of taking the contractual obligation from a cost perspective from around 800 million to 383 million, which is now the obligation which we had with ICT works on the work that they had to do on IFMS 2. That was a negotiated settlement, and that is currently how we are operating with the ICT works in carrying them over from IFMS 1 into IFMS 2. I think that's the context that we can provide.
My last question, so that I can give other honorable members an opportunity. Do you have an agreement with CETA? Or is there a memorandum? Or the one that we have met here through the police and the work that they are doing there has left us really worried. And the debacle that continues with the police and IP has got that CETA tip involved. But it's a very inefficient institution. Do you have, and are you confident of the work that CETA is doing in Treasury? Do we have a memorandum of understanding between the two parties? And can we be given the copy itself?
So can I request that Pilo answers that? But as I said earlier, just as a start, insofar as IFMS is concerned, we sit with CETA, we are part of a collective in the steering committee that drives IFMS. So as insofar as that is concerned, we've got, you know, the checks and balances are there between ourselves and them, between, you know, including DPSA as the oversight role on them, including, because the reason the three of us involved is that on the PMM module, as Lesotho said, on the procurement management module, we are a guinea pig, call it that, in IFMS. Insofar as the human resource module is concerned, DPSA is a guinea pig insofar as IFMS is concerned, so that we kind of get a model right to how to roll it as 2021 approaches. But maybe Pilar can talk to the actual arrangement insofar as contractual arrangements are concerned.
Okay, honorable members, in as far as CETA is concerned, there is a master agreement and service level agreement that covers the aspect of IFMS 1. I'm talking hosting of the current PMM of National Treasury and the HRM solution that is currently used by DPSA. Yes, we have those service level agreements. They were negotiated because...
Phila, just a minute. Okay. We are discussing IFMS 2. That is his question. So you are saying you have a service level agreement for IFMS 1. His question is, do we have a service level agreement for IFMS 2? Nah.
For IFMS 2?
No.
They have not yet been signed.
Thank you very much. I must hasten to say that in terms of the whole, if you look at slide 14, the payments that we're making to CETA there, those payments are as per the service level agreement that exists. We would not be paying any amount insofar as there's no service level agreement.
No. What the gentleman is saying is that there is a service level agreement for IFMS 1, and that for IFMS 2, there is no service level agreement that has been signed. That's what he's saying, and that was his question. So I hear what you're saying, but the point that he's making, or that he was raising, was that because we've moved from IFMS 1 to IFMS 2, what are the measures, the processes, the systems in place? So for IFMS 2, there is no service level agreement that has been signed yet, meaning there should be a process that should lead to the signing. And I want to give to the comrade so that he can follow up. If there is none, when is it being signed? Why is it being held up? So that we...
That's what you wanted to clear, you see. And that contradiction is coming up, DJ. That you say something else and he's saying something else. with on IFMs too, and that's where the detail is supposed to be, which would then also mean that the working relation, you see, what we fear is verbatim commitment. You say no, they sit with us on the table, they talk and they smile. That we know it's nice, customary relations. Nobody, if I come to Treasury to look for my money, I must smile and must talk to you. But we are looking for the detail that is signed up, so that when we hold you accountable, we know that detail is in paper, black and white. It's not there. So your payment that they're talking about means to us that you're moving, you're regressing again, going back to step one, where we started to fight with you about the IFMS, that payments are not being done in a consistent manner in terms of the work that is being delivered. They are again done recklessly in what we have raised as our concern in the past. Is that the impression you want to leave us with? Or when can we get this agreement? Because it seems that the most trusted men there don't have the agreement.
Chair, no, I wouldn't want to leave it at that, because it would be giving a wrong impression that it looks like the system is still not foolproof in terms of watertight, in terms of how we as a collective want it to be. Let me put it like this, Chair. I would be more comfortable if we, in writing, still this week, come back to you on this particular response in a way that's, one, informed by documents, informed by process, and then we can sign off on the response. Because as the impression now is like I'm giving a totally different, I don't think I am, but it comes out like that. The Honorable Boy is right. So, Chair, can I request that we respond to you in writing on this one before the end of the week, in responding exactly to the service level arrangements and agreement between ourselves and CETA, insofar as IFMS2 is concerned. And also, I think the other mistake, which is fine, because it's understood how we came across to you before, and even including our own cabinet approvals, we separated IFMS 1 and IFMS 2. But clearly the project is a one project. So I want to satisfy myself that is it necessary? I'm not saying it's not necessary. Would it have been necessary that we sign another service level agreement while we're involved in the project? But again, let me check that, and also that when I respond to you, I can put my 2 cents worth of attention, and
no, that's fine. Pillar, can you switch off your mic? you want to follow up on it?
Yeah.
All right.
This is just an additional request. In your revised program, the phase 3, would you be able to take us into confidence on how you are going to interrelate with other departments in the unfolding of the project itself, the DOD, SAS, or what? I'm raising it, sir, because we have got concerns with the future of how SAS and CETA are working, which have arisen out of the investigations of IPED. If you could be preventative, find an early solution how we deal with the issues that are related to SAS and CETA. As I said, from where I'm seated, and as an individual in the committee, CETA is not the best entity. It's giving us a headache. But that's why I wanted to see the type of agreement you have with them that makes them to deliver, so that we don't lambast you continuously without looking at how CETA is doing its own operations. If you do give us an insight, I'd be very glad, sir. But I do take you up on the issue that says, the Office of Procurement would have to give us all an overall insight of how issues are standing at this particular moment. So I'm taking that Chair would have time with the procurement office at some stage to provide us with all the information that is outstanding from what the DG has raised. I'm finished, sir. Thank you very much.
All right. Without a DG preventing comrades who may want to come back to the issue of the service level agreement. But I think I take your point, and I would maybe urge comrades that maybe let's wait for that response, save to say that IFMS 1 and IFMS 2, they are two separate processes. That's why they are called 1 and 2, you see.
IFMS 1 was entirely hosted by CETA. And right now, as you indicate in slide 3, that the process for IFMS 2 is managed jointly by National Treasury, DPSA, and CETA. So it is a totally new arrangement. And the issue of the steering committee, you said the steering committee has met twice, meaning subsequent to our engagement, there were a number of things that you sought to go and change to strengthen to make the system. So I take the issue of the service level agreement to be very, very important, very, very critical, because it will imply that the people who were running IFMS 2 from the beginning up to when you now intervened must be able to give a closeout report and say, from the time we started up to now, this is what we did. These were the challenges we found. This is how we addressed them. And through their report, you will then be able to hold them accountable. And I think that is why you find that there will be issues, there will be challenges around having that report out, so that you can then be able to now sit down with CETA and have a service level agreement, knowing what has been done, what has been happening. I think we must not persist with a sense and a feeling that at National Treasury there are people who are not being held accountable. And I think the measures that we have taken so far must not stop here, go even further, so as to complete the entire process. But anyone and everyone at National Treasury who was tasked with any responsibility must be held accountable. Because if you don't do that, the financial year is ending. How do you close that up? How do you close that out? You know, when you do not have a full and firm report. I don't know whether that is a pity the Auditor General is not here, whether that might not raise audit queries. Because you have a process that has not been properly accounted for. But I think let us wait for your response, and then we can engage from there. Right. Thank you very much, comrades. I think, let's see, Ross, I would request comrades that maybe let's just take a bite on, let's say, 4 questions, so that we can be able to move around. Comrade Chulwane, Comrade Mente, and then Comrade Gekat.
Thank you, Chair. Sure. To a certain extent, I think you've answered my questions with regards to the ownership of the cell project, because remember, this started in 2005, and it does not ring well in the public domain that Treasury has not concluded this contract, so to speak, or that the new system is not implemented yet. But I think the ownership role has shifted because I was, when my view of it was that CETA in IMFS 1 played the dominant role, and it now seems that Treasury has taken full control of the system, like you correctly said. And I must say, from the presentation, it looks like perhaps we're in a better space. But as a committee chair, we need to have a special meeting with CETA, to rope in CETA, and to assess what the competency is. Certainly, you cannot have, since 2005, still an implementation at a department that is supposed to be the vanguard of financial authority, the Treasury, that it does not bode well within that department. It is certainly not accepted. And that we read about settlement amounts, and we seem to get the impression that we're moving towards fruitless and wasteful expenditure, perhaps, in that regard. But my first question would be, the audit committee rejected the draft report completed by the initial service provider. The service provider, I think you indicated that was Deloitte. Is it possible that this committee can have a copy of that rejected report so that we can look in that report, into that report? Why was it rejected? And that we can also see exactly, you've then given a new instruction as to the finalization of the forensic investigation. And I think that would be key, but we have to wait for that report, as you correctly say. But the beefing up of the internal audit function, it's not something that one would expect from Treasury. We would assume as a SCOPA committee that the audit committee has already been beefed up and that there's a huge competency within that audit committee. Chair, my recommendation would be that we also have an engagement with the audit committee. So to assess what the audit committee role was and why has it been beefed up, because I'm saying this, it looks like it is now consultants being used to beef up the audit committee in Treasury, which is actually a very strange issue, because Treasury needs to be, the audit committee needs to be very, very competent people in that regard. But if I understood that correctly, there's consultants in that regard. The steering committee, if we can have the names of the steering committee, that would be great. You said currently there's a steering committee within Treasury dealing with this. And then, of course, I think the Honourable Boys made the valuable statements with regards to the office of the Chief Procurement Officer and whether they were written or not. Chairperson, it is concerning, and as Mr. Boyer said, he said he's worried. I would say we're very, very concerned, because it seems to me that already the public protector has been lined up. It seems to me that already the hawks has been lined up, and that the full report will be given to those law enforcement agencies, so to speak. Are we expecting the worst to come from Treasury? It will not be taken well in the public domain, and we expect Treasury really to step up to the plate and to get this finalized. May I then just in conclusion, what is the current system being used in Treasury as we speak now? What is the current system before you embarked on the IMS since 2005? Is it still the old system, or is the part of the new system already installed, and what is the actual progress in terms of the money spent?
Oh, thanks. DG?
Thank you very much. Pilar and Lesego will come in as and when. Let me start with the last question. The current system, Honorable Ross, I think, you know, BAS, Basic Accounting System, LOGIS, PERSAL, all of those are still in place and have been used as we speak. So we get paid from BAS. Now, the module, the procurement module as part of IFMS is being piloted in the National Treasury. The HR module is being piloted in the Department of Public Service Administration as part of seeing that it will work. If it works, then roll it out to the rest of government, including province, etc. So, yes, we are still using old systems, and on so far as PERSAL is concerned. But for Treasury, the procurement management module is still being used. Now, are we expecting the worst? As I said in the last committee, that I work with the 1,100 people that I fully believe in, and I believe they assume, and I walk into the office in the building every day. I've got a team of professionals who should be able to do their work, whose integrity cannot be questioned in one way or the other. And I would be more happy. I'm not going to be worried. And I think South Africans will be more happy if there's wrongdoing that is being uncovered by this process, so that we can say our systems function and they work. And I'll also be more than happy if the system or the forensic or whatever process finds out there's nothing untoward, the system in the Treasury is intact, and I'll equally be happy, because I don't think I'll be comfortable working with a team of people who, in a way, have got skeletons that they've hidden here and there. So it's important that whichever way you look at it, that yes, concern, very concern, including I'll be more than happy if the report comes out and it's singling out certain deficiencies or singling out challenges that says you've got people in the Treasury who should not be there, and then we should be more comfortable. Yes, the CPO will definitely be roped in, and as the committee earlier on suggested, that actually maybe it makes sense that a report is made available, and or they even come here to actually engage on with the committee on IFMS. We will certainly give you the name of the steering committee members, and the colleagues can handle that. And engagement with the audit committee, I think, the audit committee chairperson is here, Octavia. And in terms of beefing up, Lesego can talk to that, because the chief audit executive, he convinced me in the way that makes sense, and I think it's good for the organization. And let me give you background, and I know you'll talk to it. We have been in a bad space in the last 3 financial years as government, not as a treasury, as government. Parliament endorsed and approved the appropriation bill that cut budget by 32 billion
2 years ago, mainly addressing issues around zero fee increase that year. And at the time, we did not have an option but to cut human HR COE budgets and force departments to really squeeze themselves further. When we thought it's 1 year, that in the last financial year, the same thing happened. In the current year that's ending in a week or two from now, you have the same challenge around revised growth, under collection revenue, and the departments obviously are squeezed from an HR point of view. When people leave, for you to remain within budget, and it's also a squeeze, a discipline on us also. We don't give ourselves a lot, and then the rest, the system is such that it's proof that the allocations process are fair and transparent, the budget process is fair and transparent, MINCOM BAT functions, budget office functions, including cabinet in allocations. Now, if Treasury allocates my department, which is National Treasury, the public finance process, the budgeting process, allocate the reduced amount from an HR point of view, I then squeeze myself in my office in all the divisions, including internal audit. Internal audit, unfortunately, guys, if you wanted to expand, we will squeeze you. And that is in that background. That then in the situation where I'm saying to the chief audit executive that, sorry, your unit had 5 units, positions available, you cannot fill them because I don't have money for it, then innovative approaches come, and then he can talk to that as to how we will use, obviously it's a temporary, it's not an ideal where you have a small group of consultants are available and only used as and when they are needed. So we can talk to that. And that I agree with the idea that, the committee should, based on Honorable Boyd's point, you have to have a special meeting with CETA on this matter, and we will be more than happy, obviously, to also be around as you engage with CETA, because I don't think, as the committee suggests, that CETA, there are challenges there that we should be left, just leave it like that. It is an important issue for us that we have a functioning CETA and a functioning oversight role that, they are the State Information Technology Agency. We have to rely on them for technological solutions, because even IFMS, if you look at it, to be quite honest, Chair, is that in an ideal environment, this project should actually be sitting with the State Information Technology Agency and not with us. But it's with us, and we're there, we are doing it. But and my expertise can only be limited insofar as finance management. A group of economists sitting there hold me accountable for that. But unfortunately, it's such that because of the closeness of the interest that we have in the integrated financial management system, that's why it's housed. But ideally, it should be with CETA. But again, as we move forward, we have to then ask ourselves as government, how do you want to configure technology or ICT, the future of ICT, and who should be housed, where should be housed? That's a critical, important question that I think, and even in the Portfolio Committee on Public Service Administration that oversees CETA, what says to the matter in terms of e-government, what's the future of technology? Because without technology, we cannot participate in the fourth industrial revolution. That's clear. And our modernized systems in government should actually talk to that vision, which talk to a digital world, talks to a fourth industrial revolution of some kind. So we cannot be left behind. Currently, as the motivation was, and it's still relevant today, I cannot for sure give you, press a button and give you my leave management schedule or process. FMS we hope that FMS will be able to do that. I cannot, from a finance management point of view, using technology and modernizing it to actually check some of the things. We shouldn't be struggling to get reports, state. But currently, because we're using antiquated finance solutions in IFMS, in BAS, sorry, in PERSAL, in BAS, it's very difficult to actually modernize your finance management. But let me ask Ms. Seho to just address the issues about some of the questions, including the audit chair, if she's got.
DG, thanks very much. I think the Treasury probably has got one of the strongest internal functions currently in the public service. And we went through a journey.
Maybe let's expand that statement. Just go into the matter. Very subjective and can be controversial.
We went through a journey of building this specific function. Initially it was fully outsourced, and then we co-sourced it and we built our own capacity
currently in-house. At the moment, it's a function that doesn't use consultants at all. It's purely based on internal resource capacity that was recruited into the department over a period of time. The reason why we are expanding into a panel that is going to provide us with additional capacity, as the DG alluded to earlier, is simply because of two reasons. Number one, the treasury in its nature is a very technical environment, and sometimes you find that...
You know, maybe let's do this. Don't make a case to us, because we're ideologically convinced otherwise. I think maybe what you can do is to allay our concern or to clarify is to say the extent to which we utilize these services represents this particular percentage or amount. Like in a year or in 6 months, we involve them 10 times or 2 times or 3 times. In that way, it will assist us to have a sense that the internal capacity is still the overwhelming capacity that we're utilizing.
All right. Yeah. No, Chair, indeed. The panel is established such that we will only borrow from it as and when we need capacity or specialist skills. Because as I said, the technical nature of the department is such that sometimes, even in an internal function, you do need services of an economist, services of an HR specialist, services of a strategy specialist, etc., that you may not necessarily have within your own internal functions because it purely consists of auditors. So as and when we require these types of skills, we will borrow from this panel and utilize it. But indeed, the majority of the work that we do is purely being done by an in-house-based function and the resources thereof. I also wanted to just give a comment. The audit committee chair will deal with the issue around the Deloitte report and the question that was raised. The involvement of the Office of the Chief Procurement Officer on the IFMS project. The Chief Procurement Officer is the key custodian and policy holder of the procurement module of IFMS. So everything that we build in as far as the procurement module is concerned on the project, from a policy's perspective, is driven by the OCPO. So they form part of the PMO. They also get involved in assisting us drive that specific policy agenda. I think I just wanted to make that statement so it's
become clear. Is it just policy formulation, or does that also involve monitoring of adherence to that policy?
Yes, they do the monitoring, especially since the previous COFA hearing. We do make them involved in issues of irregular expenditure, and even when we proceed with the contract, they also assist us.
Good. That point should have ensured that it is in the DG's presentation, because then it escalates that element too, you see, so that it does not come later. But I hear what you're saying. Chair?
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I just want to talk to the issue around the rejection of the previous audit report, Deloitte's report. I think in the previous engagement with this committee, we did indicate that as the committee, we decided to terminate our relationship with Deloitte based on their unethical conduct. And specifically, I made reference to the letter that was sent to the DDG Corporate Services of the 3rd of March 2017. Based on that process, we therefore had to look at, because we were terminating their services during the execution, we had to therefore consider whether they were eligible for any payment. And we then had to look at the report that they presented at the time. And that report was dated the 22nd of March, 2017. So the committee, when we went through that report, we realized that it didn't address the scope. And as a result, we concluded that that report cannot be relied upon. It's of a poor quality, and therefore they are not eligible to be paid any monies. And hence, when one of the members asked if Deloitte has been paid, we openly said no payment has been made to Deloitte, and as a committee, we don't think they deserve to be paid any monies for the work that they have done. As far as the capacitation of the audit committee, I just want to echo what the DG and the head of internal audit has said. The capacitation has got nothing to do with the audit committee. The committee is a six-member committee with various skills, and therefore we do not rely on the panel that has been appointed by the department We are an oversight committee. That panel is solely there to capacitate internal audit in the execution of its work. Chair, I think as far as the concerns around the involvement of the PP, the Hawks, is there anything, any worst that you should expect? We don't know. That's why we have a process whereby the investigation has to be done by a firm that has not breached any code of ethics. And as the committee would like to urge the members to afford that process to be concluded, and up until such time we'll then afford the committee the report. As far as the Hawks engagement is concerned, they've been engaging us, and they have requested that we provide them with an affidavit. So that affidavit was submitted last week, and based on their process, the investigating officer has indicated that he is going to request a provisional closure of the matter until such time that the Nexus forensic report is presented. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Congratulations.
Chairperson, thank you very much. My follow-up question, let me just start with the last that was just asked by Evan Edition by Honorable Ross on the investigation part. Maybe I will link it to slide 5. But what I wanted to ask is the time of the investigation. As the contracted investigation period is from the 1 to the 30th of April, which means it's just 2 months. And as I was just thinking that if that 2 months is going to be suffice for that investigation, I don't know whether it's an agency or it's something else, it's a state agency or it's something else. Because this matter has been sitting with the department, with the National Treasury, for quite some time, and it didn't work for that particular time, so I was just thinking for that particular year. And maybe if one can just find out a DG, how much does it going to cost the department to pay this service provider in relation with of this investigation? The second one is on the issue that was raised by the Auditor General on slide 5, where you talk about the matters relating to Oracle, that is, as well as an investigation. And I just wanted to find out if the same investigation is the one that is included with the forensic one. Is it one or is it a separate one? And linking to that one, ADG, wanted to talk to you.
Just lower your voice.
Is it too much?
No, I'm talking about Mr. Momo.
Oh.
Yeah, continue.
Okay. I was surprised that my voice has started to be okay. linking to it, it's only the explanation on your saving of 149 million in terms of the system upgrade and the coding support. I see here you're talking about 719 million over 20 years. And I think it's the same question that was asked by Honorable Boy on the issue of CETA. Is this a different body that is going to do the upgrades and the coding support? Now, let me just start by saying, Chairperson, maybe we should appreciate that National Treasury is going on a point of reducing the cost. And I'm just asking myself, are we always going to borrow or going to rely on something else as government to say that we should really budget for 719 million as much as we have tried to save? I just don't understand. If maybe DG can expand on that one. And my last question, Chairperson, I'm not going to go over four, it's just three. I'm sure you've counted them, ne? Yeah, just three. I just want to ask, actually, when do we anticipate this IMFS to be functional, where we can say, as government of South Africa, as the national treasury, then we have the IMFS? Taking into consideration that from 2005 until to date we're still struggling, when are we really going to see it functional? And how much would have cost the country for it to be functional, including all the other areas, DG, of negotiating, paying the failed one, and now placing the right one? Just, yeah, it's just that, Chairperson. Thank you.
Thank you very much. My colleagues will also assist in answering some of the questions. Pilar, maybe just talk to the last question around the cost and the date and the target and what exactly Oracle is and how it is, because the question on Oracle, whether we should do it in-house, I mean, it's something that clearly it's a system that, you know, you cannot on your own. You have to, it's one of those things that you have to procure anyway. Whether it's a SAP solution from an IT point of view, Pila can also explain that. And also just in terms of how much it's going to cost, including the tender itself. Maybe Lesotho can also just help us there about the cost, the actual cost for the tender.
Okay, DG, if I may come in. In as far as Oracle is concerned, remember we bought the software licenses up front. With a discounted fee, and part of the agreement, the master agreement, was that that was negotiated, was that we will pay them a certain fee, which is a software annual license support. It's a standard practice in the IT industry. You would pay for annual software licenses, so as to keep your software up to date, like you see with the new technology that you're using now. You'll see, you have to switch on your phone to your Wi-Fi, what, so that it gives you the updates. So it's the same analogy that happens in the software. To keep it up to date, you need to pay a certain annual fee over a period of time. So if you look at the saving aspects, it really talks to that. And if you look at it, we see it as a long-term investment, because now, if you don't buy that annual support fee, your software becomes very dormant, and now it means now in the future you need to invest a lot on the upgrades, which is what we are trying to circumvent here. So it's an industry practice. It happens in each and every organization with even other software apart from Oracle. It's a standard practice. And then if you talk again the expectations in terms of when IFMS will be functional, I think the timelines that DG has alluded to are quite very critical. I am talking IFMS 2, not IFMS 1. We are planning to have the design in the blueprint by the end of this year. I'm talking calendar year, 2018, November 2018. And then by next year, June, we are expecting at least two departments, I'm talking National Treasury and DPSA, to be up and running before we hit the lead size. I'm talking the Western Cape province and three departments in the Eastern Cape. However, the issue of appetite in terms of a big bang rollout is still something we still need to work around with the steering committee, looking at the budget that is available at that point in time. Also looking at the aspect of the procurement approach, as we are going to be advised by the Office of the OCPO, in terms of how should we approach the procurement of the national rollout in ensuring that the triple BEE aspects are being met. So it's one of the things we are working towards. Also, the issue of the funding and the costing model will also give us that view. But at this point in time, we are not able to say, post a lead site implementation, how are we going to make sure that we meet the 2021 target. So it will depend on the level of appetite, obviously the level of expertise.
What appetite are you talking about?
Sorry?
What appetite are you talking about?
The appetite in terms of are we prepared to go multiple implementations? For an example, have been engaged various committees in government. There is a very strong appetite, like in the Northwest province, for an example, to have IFMS up and running because they've got no systems in place. So that's the kind of appetite we need to, as government, we need to, for an example, the issue of Gauteng as well.
No, fine.
They're set there. So
no. Yeah. I'm saying the appetite part is explained. I understand.
Okay.
Continue.
So the issue of Gauteng as well, there is SAP that is in place. So those are the things we need to determine as to whether they are prepared to extend those agreements long term, because now if it means those agreements are extended long term, it will delay the rollout of the IFMS in those in such provinces. So those are the aspects.
Okay, thank you very much. The issue around the investigation period and the question that was asked, it's a 12-week investigation. And obviously the terms of reference and the scope was very clearly articulated when we did the advert for the tender. What the investigation firm is currently doing is that they have fully capacitated this investigation and it's running in parallel streams. So it's not as if one component will wait for the other component to be completed. There's about six teams that are running with the investigation concurrently looking at different streams. So they are really pushing, and we do believe that that 12-week period, they will be able to conclude on it. The other important element is that because the information that is required for this investigation was already obviously compiled when the previous investigation team was looking at it. So making information available, setting up structures, making sure that they do the relevant interviews, that process is seamless, so they are able to move with it very quickly. In terms of costs, the bid that was submitted by Nexus Forensic, which is the company that won the bid, is 4.4 million rand. So that is what is going to cost the National Treasury to do this investigation as things stand. Thanks, Chair.
Can I amplify the point around the timing? I think the terms of reference were issued to all service providers and they all came back responding to the terms and also estimating how long it will take them to execute. So it was not an imposed, it's not an imposed time. It's them saying that it will take them 12 weeks to complete the exercise. As far as the investigation relating to the AG matters, earlier in the DG's presentation, he did allude to the fact that the terms of reference in the current investigation has been expanded. And that's exactly the point whereby issues that related to irregular expenditure emanating from the ICT works contract were therefore roped into this specific terms of reference where we're looking at the settlements around IFMS 1, the appropriateness of those processes, and also whether there was value for money, and also the rationale around those conclusions.
Okay. That will be my problem. Okay, anyway, you asked three questions, so I'll allow you to make your follow-up.
Sorry, actually, it's not even a follow-up. Maybe it's a concern in the form of a comment in terms of the rollout of the whole program by the 31st of November towards the two departments, and provinces, etc. To maybe just to ask, because my question actually was to ask, you know, when you check in terms of your procurement in different departments, we have so many loopholes, but we do have the PFMA that is in place. But it has found that people, they just come and rob the system as it is. So when I was asking the question, it's in the sense that maybe probably IMFS will come and help the country as it is. So the sooner is it in place, the better for South Africa. And maybe just to link it to one thing, to say, in terms of your MFMA, your municipalities, is it going to assist or is it just going to be a different program that runs through national and provincial government, not going to local government. Because I think at our point where we're sitting, we ask it in a sense of, in terms of corruption, in terms of a system that has got loopholes where everybody will come and rob the system. I think that was my main intention when I was asking this question, Chairperson. Because, you know, it doesn't satisfy me, DG, honestly, when you speak about its two departments, national departments, then two provinces, like maybe probably Gauteng, Western Cape, Eastern Cape, and whereas we've got nine provinces, and really the country is hungry for something that will be able to guard people. Thank you.
Okay. Can you respond to that before I go to Comrade Mente?
Just quickly, I think, you know, no doubt that Honorable Chilwan is correct. The IFMS will come with lots of benefits. Unfortunately, for now, the current framework and the current conceptualization of the rollout is to provinces and national departments. Does not include municipalities at this point in time. But I guess the choices that government will have to make in future should also include all of that. The reality is that this is a massive project. It's one of those large projects that it's just scary by just thinking what it means and anything that goes wrong. And that's why I think we have to approach it very carefully in terms of switching on, off and on, that when you switch off PERS or PERSAL, that the following day something kicks in, because it has got the capacity to collapse government and service divide in a big way. So I think that's why the testing and the piloting will be for a while, including how we roll it out to all provinces. But we take your point, and I think the point that you're making, Honorable Chilwan, is that the sooner the better for FMS to roll out. And I think that's in the spirit, I think we take that comment and say, to us as government, including CIT and DPSA and everyone who's involved in this, speed and agency is of importance.
All right. Commitment.
Thank you, Chair. Chairperson, I'm partly covered by Shelwane on the AXA audit opinion, but I have a huge concern. Exactly like you have indicated, DG, that this system is a system that it's full of threats. It might have impact on service delivery. It might even collapse the whole financial system of government. And with that said, it means you have to be sure that it's a proper system that's going to address what is required. My problem then is which volumes and volumes of evidence and documents against CETA management at this stage. And with one of the cases that you've indicated on slide 4 and the forensic investigation you are having concerning the issues of the IFMS 1. And those people are still on the very same, some of them are still on the very same management, which is carrying over through to the IFMS 2. Now my concern is, we don't know how long this investigation is going to take. Possibility is that some of those people with the elements of corruption, they are going to utilize the same platform to delay this whole process. Are you having people from your department? I don't know how your bidding processes are. But as I look at it, it looks like CETA does it alone. Are you having people that sit there for the interests of Treasury or your audit committee? Do you have a delegation that sits with the bid in order for you to screen the people that are coming in for these different systems that must be put in place? And do you have a way of eliminating those that you don't necessarily need? Because when you pilot, at times you are going to be sent a wrong system to pilot it, only then they know that it will fail. then again you have to inject another money for someone else for a new proposal for another route. So I just want to check, do you have a technical know-how from your management, or do you have a delegation that has a technical know-how when you are getting these people who are going to build the system? Thank you.
Thank you very much. That's a very difficult question, because it talks to our role as a treasury and our interest in the management broader in its broader sense, not only in FMS, in its broader sense in the management of public finance in the country. The question is, do I have eyes everywhere in the system of government and the implementation of programs to confirm and verify that money spent accordingly, that we are not in any way blindfolded by what processes unfold in other departments? That's one thing. It's a very difficult question.
Why don't you narrow it to IFMS? Because then that might be an easier conversation,
yes,
than if it is project.
I was going to ask permission from Honourable Member to just narrow it to IFMS, because the question was much bigger. Just because...
No,
because
I think it's bigness. Comes in the context when IFMS is done, then it is rolled out to everybody. Then what? But for now, as we are designing it, as we are trying to roll it out, do you, taking into account IFMS 1 and the failures that were there, do you, as the process unfolds now, have those technical skills or capacity to monitor and manage the process so that we have the desired outcome?
That is an ideal situation. That's why we housed the project management of IFMS in the treasury, and that's why we have to oversee that, including the procurement. Obviously, with oversight from OCPO, I take that, manage the procurement that we don't get Mohajani technologies when we should actually be getting Oracle or SAP, because they are the two big players. Because there's a potential that you get Mohajani technologies and they don't have a clue, or they cannot even, they have to borrow licenses to come and sell to. So we have to be careful. And I think that's why the key for us is to strengthen the project management office as per the questions and the concerns that the committee had in the first round of discussions last year. What is the capacity and the management capacity of the management, of the ICT insofar as IFMS is concerned in the treasury? I think we're strengthening that and ensuring that we've got the right capacity to evaluate is critical and is important, so that we are not blindfolded by whatever processes. And as I say, the steering committee becomes then therefore critical in terms of the oversight that we play, and maybe, Pilar, we have to indicate who are the members, so that the question came out earlier. Maybe let's spell out the entities and the actual people who sit there, so that the committee is aware. So, honestly, I think all I can say to you is that, like hawks, we have to be on, like real eagles. We have to put our claws in what's happening in the project. That's treasury one. When need be, if we have leaking capacity, we have to source that capacity to ensure that at any given point in time, we understand what's happening. The seriousness of which can be demonstrated like this, Chair. When we embarked on a forensic investigation the second time around, the one that the report is coming on the 3rd of April, we had an option to just go through to our own panel of forensic investigators. There's about eight companies that are already, because remember, we've got a unit in the Treasury called Specialist Audit Functions in the OAG, Office of the Accountant General. We've got contracted specialist audit services that we contract, and we've got eight companies in there. Because of the seriousness of the project and what has to show me or show us at the end, we expanded and said we are not going to limit this IFMS forensic investigation to only these companies in the panel. Let's open up to everybody out there so that the capacity and skill and investigative capacity can be sourced from everywhere. So that demonstrates the seriousness that we had to really understand and the careful. It took long, Honorable Chilwani, but unfortunately it took long because I think we the answers in the future of the project lies with this forensic investigation, because it will point out the challenges, it will point out the directions where you have to be going, it will point out the weaknesses that are there, including what needs to be strengthened. And for me, I think it's a good basis to ensure that we reach 2021 in a way that we have to. So yes, we will consistently and continuously evaluate and check the kind of capacity that we have to actually make sure that it meets the requirements of this magnitude of the project. Thank you.
All right. Comrade Kekan?
No, thanks, Chair. Chair, listening to the DG, it seems as if I'm listening to somebody who is speaking, that is to us, in 1994 when we were taking government. Because, to be honest, some of these systems were supposed to be implemented, that is, long time ago. Now, the answers that one seems to be getting is that this is a new government, we elected yesterday, and we are still, that is, trying, that is, these systems. But then, my question is, in the first slide, that is, of the DG, he indicated that they suspended all related IMF as payment. Now, my question is, on the suspension of the payment, that clearly indicates that there were some irregularities, and hence the reason to suspend, that is, those payments. Now, the question is, I think there were people involved, that is, in those irregularities, when we talk about the question of the consequence management. What happened to that? Or is that part and parcel of the forensic investigation that we've indicated earlier on? Okay. Yeah. I thought that somebody is disturbing you. Is that part of the forensic investigation that you indicated earlier on? Or maybe there are measures that you have taken in terms of the people who are involved that is separate from the forensic investigation that you indicated, that is, earlier on? Because you admitted that there was wrongdoing there. And I would be interested to know as to, one, what have you done? It's very clear that you are saying to us payment processes reviewed and control strengthened. But obviously, there were warm bodies who were involved there. Now, I want to know, that is, in terms of the warm bodies that were involved there, what have you done? Or if you have done nothing, what are you going to do, that is, in terms of this particular issue?
Are you done? I was giving you...
You just had
those questions.
Yes.
Thanks. I thought Chair will come to my rescue here, because Honorable Kekan is raising critical, important things that were dealt with at the beginning of the meeting. But it's fine. I will then go and respond once more, because what we were saying is that, Honorable Kekan, we were here, and then these are the issues that you raised at the time, and we said that, for instance, we will go and suspend some payments. Because we were not, based on the 54 findings, we were not comfortable to just keep on spending when clearly there are leaks in the system. And then all we are saying now, by just saying to you that we have now reviewed our payment systems, it took at least 2 or 3 months, by the way. We stopped all payments, and we had the internal audit and the CFO office and the treasurer taking serious and taking personal control of reviewing the systems of payment, IFMS-related payment, based on the internal audit report. So I was reporting back to the committee at the beginning of the meeting that we have dealt with that. We are comfortable that payments that are being made now are in line. Secondly, I said at the time to the committee that we will we will act against individuals, because at the time, as the committee picked it up, that we then relieved some officials of the responsibilities. We did that, and they were reassigned to their original functions. We got acting people to actually assist us in the IFMS project, and I said we would not have acted in a way that says you have been corrupt, including companies, by the way. You have been corrupt. You have been, because we said we will embark on a forensic investigation that the details of which will be available to us first week of May, and as we just indicated that the project is ongoing now. And it's costing us $4.4 million, and the report will be available on the 30th. And that's where I thought, that's insofar as Honorable Kakana's questions are concerned. I don't know if I left anything insofar as this particular response is concerned.
No, that's fine. Pratim, and then Lengwa, and then Comrade.
Thanks, Chair. Hello, BG. I apologize, Chair, for being a bit late this morning. I did tender my apologies. Chair, once again, I might walk into the same mistake that Honorable Chikana made, or not mistake, but...
it's okay, the DG will not mind.
It may have been asked, but I think it's an important question, so bear with me if it has been, but if it hasn't, it is important. I'll just pick up here. I remember the last time we engaged, one of the questions I asked was just very simple. We spent a huge amount of money, 1.2 billion rand, on IFMS, and we still don't have it. And, I think that is being canvassed today. But that really is the issue at the end of the day. But now I see here that we, at the time we asked you to do a forensic investigation into the matter, and I see there was a false start. So who was that false start with? Okay. And why was the firm, the audit committee rejected the draft report completed by the initial service provider. So who was the initial service provider? And why were they terminated? Were they regularly appointed in the first place? Were they terminated because they were incompetent? And what was the cost? Was this covered? Has this all been covered? Okay, all right, well then I'll ask two more questions on it. What was the cost that was spent on that firm? I don't know if that's been covered. And if that firm was incompetent and should have been in there in the first place, have you started any civil recovery against the people that appointed the firm in the first place? It's all been covered.
We will respond. Can I ask the committee chair?
But very briefly.
No, sure, fantastic. And then the other issue that Honorable Boy raised was the issue of CETA. Now, we know that CETA have got major challenges and major problems. Honorable Boy asked you to comment on the CETA involvement in the SAPS investigation matter relating to various companies there. I don't know if you have any information on that, but I would just like to get your comment on the current investigation that CETA are running to try and clean up their department of corrupt elements that are involved in the SAPS investigation. If you are working with CETA to such a close... in such close proximity, and I'm sure some of your treasury officials have been at our hearings with the SAPS and CETA, can you comment on the work that they're doing in terms of their investigation? Do you think it's a waste of time? Do you think it's good work? Do you think it should continue, if you are able to comment? Because I understand that it's been raised and it's outside of the brief for this morning, but now that it has been raised, can you give us some comment on that, if you are able to? Thank you.
All right. No. I think let's respond to the last question. The other questions, yes, they were covered. It was Deloitte. They were unethical. That's why they were stopped. They were not paid a cent. Yeah. Let's talk to.
Chair, on the last question, I'm not very comfortable because I don't have the full details of the issues that honourable member is raising around. SAPS in particular and the investigation currently. I think it will be a bit out of order of me to comment on something that I'm not on top of when I should be. But it's something again that we can give you a view, because certainly my team is part of it.
Just a minute. I think central to this question was, are you aware of CETA's attempt to clean itself of corrupt elements within its...
Yes, I am aware of CETA trying. They have been, in fact, yes, I am aware, one. Secondly, they are even asking us of support and actually secondment of certain key staff members to be seconded to CETA to actually assist them in terms of especially colleagues in CPO's office to assist them in terms of addressing some of the challenges. And currently, letters are going to and fro between them, agreeing to this and not agreeing to that one, because they are specific in terms of the people that they're requesting. So we are aware that they are trying to clean themselves up.
Okay, so just very quickly, so you're supporting the current CEO's efforts to do that?
Let me answer in a more general way. I support anyone in government who is focused on cleaning up systems and modernizing systems and dealing with issues of corruption, etc. We will support that person any day, including the current CEO.
Chair, you wanted to make an addition.
Yes, Chair. I think there was a specific question around consequence management around people who were involved in the appointment of Deloitte. I think based on the nature of the termination, it was not as a result of someone having not done his or her work properly. So there's no consequence management and nothing has been paid to them. Chair, can I take an opportunity to clarify one matter around the scope so that we manage expectations? I think it was a question that was raised by Honorable Mandy, where she referred to the investigation being taking so long around IFMS1. So just to clarify that the current investigation, the previous one that we started, was focusing on the findings of the internal audit report, which was focusing on IFMS2. In terms of the revised terms of reference, the only IFMS1 related aspect is around the settlement part, nothing around what happened before. I think it's a very important expectation to manage.
Oh, that's fine. Sengwa?
Thank you, Chair. Good morning. I hope you had received my apology this morning. It's unlike me to be late. So I apologize, the Honorable Chairperson, and to the meeting. Flights are always a problem. Chair, I just want to, maybe this has been covered, I don't want to run into the risk of now cargo reverse to what has been discussed. But on the issue of expansions and deviations, Chairperson, I just have...
Why don't we deal with that last? It's just... round of the IFMS issues, I've said we'll deal with them.
Oh, I just want, no, she's not even a question, she wanted to make a request.
Okay. What?
To the effect that, and I'm glad that the Deputy Minister is here, that I would be comforted if Treasury could look into the deviations and expansion that have been granted to Transnet in their entirety. Because when we had them here, we raised the point, Chair, that you have a letter from Treasury, which for all intents and purposes will dismiss the granting of an expansion of a deviation. But then the final paragraph in that letter would then grant it. So it's literally chalk and cheese. I think if you speak to the office of the chief procurement officer, he may have that information. We can even provide it for you, so you can do your own internal, independent assessment of it. But what I'm saying is, there is a huge, huge, huge problem in that regard, because reasons advanced for granting those kind of deviations and expansions do not correlate with the concerns that have been raised. So on one hand, in one letter, one hand it says, no, and cites a whole long list of things. But the concluding paragraph goes on to grant that deviation of expansion. It's a strange kind of arrangement, and I think that it must be looked at, because it compromises the integrity of expansions and deviations and entrenches them as a norm as opposed to them being an exception. So that was just, it's not, it's just a general question. Secondly, Chair, maybe this may have been asked, that what happened post the termination of services of Deloitte, whether somebody else filled the shoes, of Deloitte, whether they were internal or external, because Chairperson, I'd be very, very concerned if, quite frankly, that function continued with an external body, precisely because it sets into motion what I consider to be a very wrong precedent, in that internal audit's integrity cannot be in the hands of private practitioners whose motive is profit, because they may sanitize whatever the findings may be, as we've seen with Deloitte, and we cannot fully gauge the extent to which their findings are correct. And so what that will do, Chair, is it compromises on our ability to gauge whether the work is actually of... I'm not casting aspersions on anyone.
Maybe let's have a response to the first part of your question,
okay,
because then it influences some of the further comments. Yes, that element was dealt with. It is an external body. It is doing a forensic investigation, which is clearly outside the capacity of the internal audit. Yeah. So they are going to be reporting in by end of April. Yeah, end of April we'll get, and their scope has been widened to cover a much larger focus. Comrade Kuno? No, after Kuno.
Thank you, Chairperson. I don't want to ask questions because I had to leave and go to international relations earlier on, and maybe they've been asked. But the question that I wanted to ask and the problem I had with the DG when he was answering about the IFMS and how the system will be enrolled to into government systems, was when he said that Oracle and SAP they've been players for a long time, and you can't have an incomer with Mukhajan coming into the system because they still have to learn. I have a problem with that, a serious problem, Chairperson and DJ. The problem is that when will then Mukhajani come in? Are we going to fall into the trap of monopolizing companies forever? Is there a way of your Oracles and SAP transferring skills to Mukhajani so that they can come into the system? I mean, it's been more than 23 years now, Chairperson, and we can't keep on making excuses about the newcomers in the system. Then we are actually... We are not changing anything, because the big players will stay being big players and nobody will come into the system. And it's a serious, serious concern that I have. And that's what I always try to express, that we do need to have your Mukhajanis coming in on board. And I'm giving you an assignment, DG, to actually say, next year after you have rolled out this, and you have seen that it's working properly, you must have tried to come up with a Mukhajani that is coming on board to make sure that those big players do transfer skills. Thanks, Chair.
Okay, so you got your...
thank you very much. I think this is there are two parts to the response in terms of what Honorable Kuno is saying. I think firstly you have globally... Globally, you can only have a few of these players, and it can only be Oracle, can only be SAP, and it can only be nobody else in terms of this space. This is, that's why I asked Pilar, he's not here. Maybe, in terms of Oracle, when I said you can never have Mukhajan technologies, it's the only person can only be these big players in that space. But however, the Mukhajani technologies come in supporting. But the platform, what you pick, okay, please listen, well, let me explain that, because it's very important that we propose this one now.
No. I think your explanation suffice. We don't want to go into the technical, because he's asking a political question around issues of transformation. And I think you have answered that. We don't want to get into the technical aspect. No. I'm saying the question has been answered. Even the head of internal audit wanted to respond, and I'm saying a question is that your statement that we don't want the Mukhajanes must not come across as implying that the big players will remain big. But now you have explained it, that at the level of, you know, the systems, you can only get those who are already in the field, who have the skills and this, but the support, the subcontracting, that's where. So you are together. It was just a question of, you know, having made a statement in passing. Yes, Commissioner.
And addition to that question, in the agreements that you enter into with whoever, do you build in a clause, particularly on the issue of the transfer of skills? Because all what we are saying as government, we are not saying we want to get rid of consultants, but we are saying they do have skills. They need to transfer those skills, that is, to government, so that government is capable, that is, of running its own affairs. Because the situation as it is right now, we are solely dependent, that is, not only in your department, in a number of departments, we are dependent on consultants. Now, we are saying, my question is, do you have an arrangement where when you engage them and when they leave, at least there is a percentage of some transfer of skills?
All right. You want to talk to that issue?
Look, the government that we serve has got a policy framework that talks to radical economic, social, economic transformation. And it talks to, you know, in terms of the Deputy President's pronouncements and during the State of the Nation address, the Minister of Finance in his budget speech, it's clear that Deputy Minister, correct. The President's pronouncements, and we have to implement. We don't have a choice, but in, you know, our procurement system should ensure that that happens. Our agreements that we enter should reflect that policy framework, including the rollout of some of the government programs, should ensure that that is the center of the unfortunate. It's unfortunate we don't have a choice. That's all I'm trying to say, that it is part and parcel of the mix.
No, that's fine. The first part, we did not hear it. No, I must give Comrade Board to... Yeah.
I'm not satisfied with the answer. Maybe it's because you attempted to answer it when the DG wanted to answer it. I agree, it's the global players. This is the global, and I mean, IFMS was brought there. That's why the global players. My question is, Chairperson, it can be global players, but we have a way, if we want to change things in South Africa, this radical economic transformation that is talking about, or social economic transformation that is talking to, if we only say this is global players, but when it comes to South Africa, for us to change this global players, because it's like somebody putting a gun into your head and say you have to do it this way. And I mean, technology is changing. We are in a technology. Things are changing. Our children are getting into this field, and we need to see changes. That's why my question is that, okay, it's globally, these are the players that are playing there. But when it comes to South Africa, we have to find a way of bringing some other, people to come into this play. And one day, after 40 years, we'll be saying, at least we do have actors in the global sphere, you know, within South Africa that was created. That's the content of my...
All right. I thought he actually responded to that. That's why I said you are in agreement. But anyway, let me give him to...
Let me ask Pilar to give a a very technical response around ERP systems and how it functions, and Oracle and SAP.
But you see, the question is a generic question, which does not require a technical response.
Okay, no. I think let's answer it like this. I agree as a principle. I agree with the principle that says new players must come into technology spaces and other spaces. As part and parcel, by the way, if I have to take you back on this IFMS project, ICT Works is that, and it's a 100% women-owned, black women-owned company. The reason they are there is because it's the transfer of skills and the playing in that space whereby they come underneath Oracle. And that's the platform they are working from, and the support thereof in terms of rollout. That's where they play.
All right. No, it's okay. If it helps you to understand, it's fine. But the ICT Works issue remains an issue that needs to be discussed. So I wouldn't have loved that example to be used. But anyway, I think, like I said, I think we are in agreement. Systems designs, you would have companies that are miles ahead of what you may get in the country. But once your systems are here, how do you bring in transfer skills and ensure that...
Okay.
Mr. Pillar. Just a minute. Comrade Boy.
Hiki, from a word of advice, as parliamentarians, use us as your soundboard. When you deal with CETA, we know more broader, deeper problems. That's why we're interested in this service level agreement of yours. It is a huge problem which is going to embarrass government. Engage your procurement guy that comes and sits with us here. Ask him to give you a detailed analysis of CETA. CETA is in deep trouble. You might not even find that COO be resigning. People inside there are talking too many things about themselves. So do some good analysis before you go the road you want to go. And if you want to win our confidence in how you deal with CETA, CETA is rotten. I must be simple to you. It doesn't have the capacity you want to provide to us. If we were running in synergy, we would simply tell you that you are talking from a different world. We are talking of a world that last week we had CETA in front of us. Tomorrow we're going to have CETA in front of us because of the work and the bad work that they are doing. That's why this IFMS will never rise. For CETA is not a good entity. But you see, I want you to take off this one on the procurement. You know you created a good system. We were very upfront when it was created, the centralization of procurement. We fought against it. We thought that you treasury as usual creates a big head, no foot down, and it's creating problems. On that part that there's no footing, it's correct. OPES, OPC, OPEC, yes, is a problem. How do you use your, this is the minister, the former minister listened to us. This is his budget speech on page 24. Dealing with deviation. He says deviation can also result in anti-competitive practices that open the door to corruption and which limit transformation by preventing small business from doing business with the state. That's what Tlengwa is trying to talk to, direct. It's what the minister said. In recent years, the large number of deviations from normal procurement processes has reduced the credibility of the supply chain management system. That means procurement. So if you say to us, you have them at the level where you bounce with them, and you don't have them integrated, it means that Treasury wants to stand alone and doesn't want to be scrutinized by procurement. These are at 94 billion. They are at 94 billion. When you say to us there's a shortfall in revenue, we are shocked that that amount of money is in Treasury, is with deviation. But DG, you're telling the public that you don't have that money. And this deviation, as Honorable Sheng has already indicated, that solely has the power. Now, this is what amazes us. Solely has the power. He meets today with Transnet on a Sunday. On Monday, he gives them a letter, authorized, 5 billion gone. That's why it's at 94 billion. Now, I don't understand this. It's what we don't understand, all of us. That how does one official, without the authorization of the ministry, parliament, can spend 94 billion? How does that happen? And then when you get down and deep into deviation, you then get all the different problems done by different companies. Is it Transnet? Is it ESCOM? All the SOEs, there are challenges. Even CETA takes deviation. It's the easiest route in government now, which disempowers companies, black companies, which builds on corruption, which affects directly Treasury. You see, this is where we get to be worried. Because every time you ask, did you go to Treasury? Yes, we did. And then we are being shown this monotonous letter. Do this, please. Consult this one, please. And after that, it's authorized. But it's more than a billion. Where is the limitation for your officials? You see, we're not looking at the individual. We're looking at your rules. Like, is it so much that you yourself as a DG can authorize somebody to sign off a 1 billion without your ministry, without anybody getting involved? Doesn't it breed corruption? And doesn't it then make your department look a little bit inefficient in how it runs this particular operation? And then it compromises governments on small entities and small business in its policy. So when you said to us this morning, and when all of us are trying to say to you, we are worried about this procurement, it's because it directly affects you as a department now. It's no more about those entities. Those entities, they come in the first day, they meet the tender requirement. From there on, it just continues for about 10 years, and they spend more than 2 billion. I tell you now, Transnet has opened up its own security company. The same thing that we have with the rogue unit, you're going to have it in Transnet. It's increasing. They came in, they said, no, we just want to put in this small technical thing. It goes on. Now, this is what the minister has said after we've spoken to him. But it seems as if we have not been able to convince you to understand that deviations are on the verge of collapsing this government in the way they're being handled. Without accusing you, without saying to you anything, but we wanted to bring it to your attention. We are going to go into detail. We are going to confront the procurement man with you coming to listen how we have analyzed all the different levels and letters that have been exchanged between departments and the procurement guy. I would appreciate, I would have said it to the former minister also, read the letters that they have written. Are shocking. How do you authorize a 1 billion account? And it's a small official. And you can't blame Soli. You can't take Soli to court because he says, I've been given the power by the DG and I'm acting on those bases. And the minister seems to have listened to us. That's why he's bringing in the bill. But I'm telling you now, the amount is at 94 billion. By the time the bill comes, so it would be wayward, in terms of expenditure, that confronts what government calls a shortfall in its own revenue. That's why we want to give you a spot course. That look into this area. It's a very dangerous area. We are seated here because we have to interrogate, we have to rely on Treasury. But around this particular area, you are really calling us to fall with you, and I'm not willing to fall with you where there's going to be corrupt elements and accusations that are going to come out of that. That's the situation that you're confronted with. And we want to bring to your attention that look into this area, because it is becoming a problem, more deeper than what we thought it is. So we are not attacking you on the deviation, but the deviations are increasing. Outside in the market, people who have deep pockets and deep pockets tell you easily, don't tender, man. Go to deviations. It's easy there. You just interact, and the decision comes. You've got your $5 billion secured, and there's no follow-up, evaluation, and monitoring of those projects. It just continues happening, DJ. And we are worried.
Right. I think that neatly ties up to what Lengwe was raising. I'd said that we will deal with deviations and expansions at the tail end, arising from our observations and interactions. I'm sure you can take notes and then you can respond to some of the issues that have been raised. Comrade Kuno? I'm trying to check those who want to talk to
deviations, expansions. Yeah, thank you very much, Chairperson.
Right. Yeah.
I agree fully with what Comrade Boy has said. It's a serious problem, and congratulations to you, Deputy Minister. You know, the problem that I have on top of what Honorable Boy has talked about, Chairperson, is that in those letters, the motivation letters, you then talk about the strengths of that particular company that has been given this amount of money. And I asked a question, I think in some meetings that we had before. Do you have those skills within Treasury to actually check the strength of companies? Or do you only have, I mean, we have what you call, is it CPIS, where you register companies? CIPRO. Where you register companies, we'll know that this is company and all that. But do you then have those those skills to actually check the strength, and you can actually say this is the only company that can do ABCD? The deviations can be manipulated very easily, and if you're not careful, it's another way of it's going to be a big scandal, what is it? A big corruption scandal, if we don't deal with it. But my problem again, DG, is that you have a chief procurement officer. But the chief procurement officer is not the one who's signing these letters. You find that the chief director is the one who's signing these big letters. And we asked in one question that we had at SCOPA, why is this letter that you have been given authority? Because it didn't make sense. Why should we have a chief procurement officer and we have a chief director doing the same thing? And this one is saying it's delegated powers. So we're saying that it should not be, an effort of one person doing this thing. It should be a team thing where we'll be actually, when you say company X, has got the abilities and is the only one that can do this. You should have people within that team who would be saying, would be convincing all of us that what you are trying to motivate is actually makes sense. At the moment, the $94 billion that Honorable Boy is talking about, it's a serious concern. If you are serious by saying we want to save and take this country forward and actually reduce the debt that we have as a country, we need to be looking at all these things, because it talks to non-planning of departments. And if we just leave them to be doing that forever, we are not going to solve a problem. So that's why we need to look into the root causes. It's about time that government departments do plan, and they take those planning with Treasury very seriously. Thanks, Chair.
All right. Thank you. Thanks very much, comrades. I think we'd want to bring this engagement to a close.
safe to say, Comrade Deputy Minister and DG, I think contracted to the PMO does raise a question. Or maybe let me start here. In the 2-3 meetings that we've had, I must say that I have personally been impressed with the, you know, with the kind of energy that you exude around the issues that we're discussing. I think you have made it very easy for us to engage. If we can keep that trajectory, I think it can assist us. But you see, my problem is that it appears as if before you became DG, there were a lot of scattered and loose ends. And so you are trying to pull everything together. That's my worry. Almost as if there's a new party. The APC has just won the election, and now it has deployed its. No. I'm making a serious point, because as Comrade Boy said, it's almost like we're starting from scratch, and that is why I'm raising this issue around the PMO, because when you say their contracts have ended, we're not renewing. Does it imply that in the first instance, maybe we did not need them? We had employed more people than we needed. You know. And the related question is, when we first met, there was a concern around the management of the budget in the PMO, where your officials had actually delegated to the consulting firms to manage their expenditure. And it was clear that these companies have these contracts for 2 years, 3 years, 4 years, but it was clear that they had almost exhausted their budget. So their contracts have not been renewed. Is it the contracts that have not been renewed, or have they exhausted their budget and we then said, just go? Meaning, we gave people money and say this money should last you for 3 years. They exhaust it in a year and a half, and then they go. But we have a contract that should last a particular period of time. So I'm saying those issues, as you tie things, the question is, before you stepped in, what was happening? Because this is a continuum. It's not a new government. It's not after the elections. So I'm saying that is, for me, that is my word. So when you say Abacus, Mohammed Kasim, say Abacus and whoever, their contracts have not been renewed. We know Abacus said, I don't want to say capture treasure, but that's a very popular word, but somebody who gets contract for 10 years, 11 years, 12 years, has become a resident. It raises those questions. Is it contracts that have not been renewed, or people have exhausted their budgets and then left? So, ICT Works. I'll be hesitant but it's fine. But from where I'm sitting, I'll be very hesitant to. Maybe let me leave that point. But here's my point. So, and I hope when the forensic audit report comes out, you'll assist us. We have ICT Works contracted, IFMS 1, and then when Cabinet stops IFMS 1, ICT Works says, we have a contract with you, you still owe us. So if you're going to start afresh, pay us 800 million. And then you then negotiate, it comes down to 300 million. And you say, fine, for you to get this 300 million, here is some work that you must do. But now, you are also saying, when it comes to Oracle, instead of Oracle providing with licenses, you have, in the words of Mr. Pillar, why did I write this? You then merge this issue around the licenses into a bigger contract that deals with, I think, the elements that are in slide 11, 3.2. And then later on, when talking about ICT Works, in response to Comrade Kuno's question, that's why I was hesitant when you use ICT Works, having being subordinate to Oracle to gain experience. And yet in ICT 1, in IFMS 1, ICT Works was actually contracted to do, I suspect it should be the design and whatever, because you say they were using the Oracle model, which now has been given to Oracle itself. So the question becomes, so what then does ICT work do? Because that part of design and planning is now taken over by Oracle itself. And in your input, you spoke about ICT work doing other related works. I just wrote other related works because I thought that's too pregnant a statement, because it doesn't say anything. You see, what other related work? What is it that's specific? Do you have a contract with them that stipulates exactly the things that they need to do? But at some other point you spoke about them being involved in the OCPO in relation to the central supplier database, whatever. Now, I don't know whether that is still part of the 300 million settlement, or actually this is now another contract that is given to them for which they tendered and won, or which has just been given to them. So it is just a picture that is not as clear as all that, because it means that the part of the failures in ICT 1, in IFMS 1, which would have related to design and all that kind of stuff, might have been the work that was done by ICT Works. And the question becomes, exactly what are their skills, beside their name, ICT company, but what skills do they possess and what day-to-day work do they actually do? Now, fourthly, and I would want a response from Mr. Pillar, and he must look me in the eyes when he responds to this. We, last time, our main concern was around people getting paid without having done work, people being paid without clear deliverables. Now, the DG has made a sweeping statement around, we've changed processes, we've strengthened our processes to make sure that some of those excesses don't happen. But can you, Mr. Pillar, say, confirm, Uguti, indeed, we haven't, since that August, we haven't paid anyone without, you know, a proper confirmation, either willingly or there being pressure from those service providers to demand being paid or whatever, because I think that is the one thing that will give us comfort.
It is one thing for you, DG, to give instructions to say these things must not happen. But we know you are in the BRICS Bank, you are everywhere, you are this and that, so you may not be there on a day-to-day basis to oversee the minutest, you know, processing of claims. In fact, they don't come to your office, but the people who are there must be able to give us that comfort. And the concern that was raised by Comrade Mente, and I'm not sure if it's Chulwane or Comrade Kekan, around the rollout process, because we have 2021, and I was concerned when Pillar spoke about appetite, because I worry that rogue elements within departments can, in 2020, sign a seven-year contract with an ICT company. So when IFMS is rolled in 2021, they say, but we already have a contract, you know. So it perpetuates itself. I think DG, and it might not be your space, it might be the space of the political leadership. We need absolute certainty and firmness about what must happen, because this is for government. So there can be no way in which when government says 2021 IFMS, then you have one or two or three departments shooting and signing contracts that commit government for the next 5 years or 6 years or whatever as a way of giving their friends the last shot, you know, before everything is closed. So I think for me those kind of risks do need to be looked at. How do you say from no one should sign any ICT contract beyond 2022 or 2023 so that you are certain that even if there are glitches in implementation, people can just have 1 or 2 years or something like that. Mm-hmm. All right.
For the executive to consider this issue we are raising quite seriously. This is the NDP program in the capabilities of building a state. If by 2030 we don't have something tangible, you won't be able to reflect on the NDP. This is the context of why we are doing this particular work. So the chair is correct that if in 2021 companies or different departments start signing, you've got no guarantee to tell us that the NDP has met one of its targets. No, don't worry. He'll give you time to talk to him. True. I'm just making you aware.
All right. Now, but anyway, I think that point is made. Thanks for amplifying it. Now, the extra point that I want to make, Bratim, I was looking at you, and I almost asked you to ask this question. I don't understand these processes. I would imagine that if you say you want a system, you look for a company that will design, okay, they will conceptualize it, and then design it for you and present it to you, and then you roll it out. Is that as simple as, proof of concept? Now, I'm trying to ask, to find out with IFMS, where are we? Do we have a proof of concept that has been given to us theoretically? The actual design stage, have they started? Are they almost finishing it, or have they finished it so that we can then start rolling it out? So that all these things that we say we're busy with as IFMS, what exactly are they? What exactly are they? Because I see a lot of administrative little tidbits here and there, and yet what we want is a system that we can implement throughout government, meaning we must have someone, a Mukhajana technology, that say, I can design this thing. This is how it will be done. And then we say, fine, go do it. And he says, give me a year or a year and a half, I'll design it, and then I'll be done, and then I'll bring it. And then you now struggle with issues of rollout. How do you then roll it out? I just want to check, where are we in that conceptualization? Because I'm not sure where we're at. And the last but one point, last time you said to us
IFMS 1 was not a complete loss. There are aspects coming out of it that are utilized at National Treasury and DPSA. I just wanted to talk to that because I thought I had someone talking about a rollout beginning next year or some such stuff. I just want a recap on that part. So that the issue of rollout, we need a clearly what takes us to 2021, all those milestones. But all of them, for me, must be touched on that very simplistic conceptualization of proof of concept, design, and then rollout. Now, lastly, yes, I'll come to you. I want to talk to the issue that Comrade Boy and Lengua and Kuno spoke to around deviations and expansions. I said, we just want to give you our our observations. Initially, we had said we should write you a letter, but we said, okay, we are meeting soon. It would be good that we talk to it here because then it allows more people to talk and for us to engage. Our observations were, I think as you explained, we did not understand. And I think there was also acceptance in a way from that team that you have a person who is the chief procurement officer. But a critical issue like deviation and expansion do not bear his or her signature of approval. And even if some junior official, like a chief director, processes it and recommends so that he can just attach his signature and say, I have also reviewed the work. No, it is directed to National Treasury in your name as a DG. It goes straight to Mr. Chitangano. He looks at it, he responds, he signs, and that is law. And we were not happy with that because it means the process of checks and balances is not there. And in terms of simple protocol, I just struggle to understand how a CEO of Transnet will write to you as the DG and his fate is decided by a chief director. I just think it does not sit well beside all of this. And Comrade Kuno is correct. When we had a preparatory meeting in December for the Transnet hearing, it actually became not a preparatory meeting but a hearing on National Treasury. Because we're going through this letter. So, okay, here's the letter from Transnet. This is what they're saying. Here is your letter. Talk to us. There was no single letter that we could have approved if it had come to us. We're not convinced. And, okay, they considered, yeah, well, maybe mistakes were made. But at what cost? You know, so... So we're raising this to you to say, note it, and let's have a way of ensuring that there is control. And for us, because we're not, well, even if you're bureaucrats, you're South Africans. There are laws, there's a constitution, but for us as politicians, one of the critical elements around deviations and expansions is that all the companies that benefit from it are not your black-owned companies. It's all your old, white, established companies. All of them. So, meaning therefore that deviations and expansions then maintain the status quo. And there was one example that just stood out. Bidvest Protecoin, security company. Their contract was renewed 13 times. They only got a contract once, and from there,
It was just security company. Security company. 13 times. You see. And you go to SAPS. Oh yeah. Sole source. Or whatever. You go to SAPS. You find a situation where something is procured via CETA, and then they go to the SAPS and say, well, to maintain this, you only have this company, the only one that can maintain this. So contracts are entered into, renewed, and then finally you sit with a 5 billion rand worth of payments that have been made in the SAPS. And the head of procurement, the one General Mkwena, said, it's always almost like I have a gun placed on my head, because the users of the service come to us as a, you know, people in supply chain and say, look, this is the only company that there is, so approve this, because if you don't, our system will just collapse. And he says, what can I do? I have no option but to approve. So when this was introduced, it was meant to assist in specific situations. But it has been misused for other things. And so we're calling for vigilance. And the starting point is to strengthen the processes within Treasury to make sure that these things don't happen. Now, Comrade Mente, your Smolenyana one, then I'll give the DG to respond, because I spoke to a number of things, if he will, and then we'll hand over to the Deputy Minister, and then we can bring this to a close. Yes, Comrade Mente?
Now, just in addition to the concept of the IFMS, which you have framed it very clear in the beginning, I have a question in my mind. The DG says it's at national and provinces and not extended to municipalities. So my question is, one, was that a cabinet position, or is it a proposal from these concept papers that it must just be there and not be there? And did you then interrogate it if it's a concept proposal, that if we do it all together, it's going to save cost? Or is it so complex that let's start at this level and then phase it down at a later stage? Just want to get if it's from the concept as well.
All right, thanks.
Thank you very much, Chair and Honourable Members. I think starting with Honourable Mentor's point, I think there was a deliberate attempt to leave out municipalities. If you look at municipalities, they are complex in their own right, unlike national and provincial departments, which is one system. 254 municipalities would use 254 systems and processes. And as a result, it's more complicated in there, including standardizing systems and processes. So I think local government reform in itself is a huge project, like it was for at least first 10 years of our democracy, in trying to basically address systems in national and provincial government departments and standardize them. The SCOA project, Standard Chart of Account project, for you to define a pencil in government was very difficult. I always give this example that we had 14 education departments, House of Delegates, House of Reps, House of Bantustan A, Bantustan B, Homeland A, you know, self-governing state. So the moment 94 came, you had various systems. I'm not even talking local government for now. I'm only talking, and remember, local government, you had 721 municipalities at the time before 94. So now you have so many lines to define in the Standard Chart of Accounts, that from 4 million lines you have to define so that they are specific in terms of accounting for the same thing in government, whether you're in province A, province A, or province B, or national department A, or national department. So it took at least first 10 years, from 94 to 2004, 2003, 2004, to get that right. What have we done since? If you look at municipalities, you've got something called MSCOA project, Municipal Standard Chart of Accounts, which has got challenges of its own in terms of rolling that out across municipalities which have got advanced systems and those that have got less advanced systems. So it's a project that is ongoing in Treasury, that because you have to define the standard first. You have to define the same pen. The same definition for a chair should be the same across from an accounting point of finance point of view. So it's a very complex thing. So I think the architects of IFMS in the state would have taken that into account to limit it to national provincial departments, because it's much easier, because already you've got some basic systems in place. So, but I think it's something that, I guess, when we engage with the future of local government and the local government reform, integrating to the systems of national systems and provincial systems is a project on its own. And from an ICT point of view, it's a challenge, as you can imagine, because we're still trying to deal with national provinces at the moment. And that talks to your whole pension fund regime. You've got various pension fund systems in government. The police, for instance, you've got municipal police, you've got national police, you don't know what you're doing. So it's still a challenge, and I think our approach to local government reform should be much, much more informed. And I think that's a broader... So I take it that the questions that you're raising, Honourable Member, is complex in that. But I think it's important that we look at phasing in, and I agree with that, understanding that we cannot leave provinces and municipalities out of this. We have to be able to account for S1, because even the MFMA in its approach, PFMA applies for both provinces and national departments, so it's easy to write something along those lines. FMA has got its own complications, and in terms of its implementation, because you deal with obviously different types of municipalities and the numbers thereof, so you're not talking the same. So yes, it is complex, and I think we have to approach the same, because it's all about improving reporting, accountability, etc. We have to have the same in municipalities in order for us to also have the checks and balances in place there. Chair, allow me, colleagues, you know, in terms of your questions around the FMS rollout, and in particular the concept, proof of concept and things like that, Pilar should be able to talk to that. But I want to delve quickly in, and I hear it's a comment and it's an advice, but Chair, I thought, you know, the last time I was here, the issue was deviation. At the time, the committee only requested us to just give you a list. We gave you a thick list. The resolution of that meeting that day was that we will have to come and engage further. And we had committed, and I particularly committed, and say, Chair, when you are ready, we will be ready to engage. But we heard you. And the fact that this is in the budget speech, it's not because the Minister of Finance wanted it, because we wanted it. It's in our interest, and I took note of the seriousness of that meeting, because the deviations are a problem. And that 6 p.m. meeting in December with Transnet, though I was not physically in the room, but I was having interest, because the things that were being discussed that day were things that matter. And my worry was what Honorable Boy, in fact, mentioned on the day of the 94 billion number, that we cannot live with this. And I said it's important that we relook. It could have been much stronger in the way we put it because of lack of space, and we had to cut it for the minister to fit in the lines that you... And I had, by the way, opened them already because I was going to read them as a response. But Honorable Boy kind of read my mind here. That it's in our interest to actually relook at the deviations procedure. And in that meeting, I was quick to acknowledge that it cannot be one person, it cannot be one unit, including one unit. It might not be the same person, but it's a unit in the Chief Procurement Office. We have to obviously balance that, the responsibilities that I have, the responsibility that the CPOF, and the responsibilities that a junior person in the form of... And by the way, I agree, Chair, but, you know, in our world view, in our work as a Treasury, and you gave an example, and it's so relevant, because as a DG of the Treasury, the whole of last week I'm in China at the BRICS meeting, and again, it's a responsibility on behalf of the state. 1 week you're on a roadshow like next week to go and convince investors that you have to invest in South Africa. So physically you find that it's not functional for a DG to be signing, writing letters, etc.
most of the functions will be delegated to the DGs, DDG, I mean DGs in the Treasury, obviously within certain prescripts. And you find that also further delegations are made. But really looking at the delegations, the CPO, and just it's a working arrangement. We have to review the work arrangement. To what extent? Maybe, Chair, some of these deviations I have to approve as DG of the Treasury. Some of them, that letter should be signed by me. In our normal day-to-day work, some DGs even take very serious offense when they get a letter from a DDG. And especially newer ones would not understand that, hey, you actually want to get that letter from a DDG, not from a DG, because of the working relationships. But again, it's a complex environment as we reform our processes. And Honorable Kekana, we are only 23 years old, you are right. In 23 years, there are some things that we never got right. We can only get them right in 200 years, if you think about it. Because some democracies are established systems, deviations are not an issue anymore because they perfected them. And I take the fact that we have to really get them seriously, hold us accountable for that, hold the deputy minister and the minister accountable because it's in the political speech in parliament around work that we need to do and modernize deviations and how we have to change them. So that it's not an individual in the form of solely, as the honourable member mentioned, and that it's not him. It should be a system of the Treasury that actually approves or not approves the deviations. Because in some cases, also, I must write to the same CPO office and request for a deviation, which not sometimes doesn't happen. So we take that comment in a very serious light, and we will have to come back to you, because the example is the worst-case example of 94 billion rand. And our statement is clear. We don't know what happens once you are given a deviation, because clearly you open yourself up in many ways where there can be an abuse in the system, and it can be worrying. Now, IFMS, yes, Chair, it was not a complete loss, IFMS 1. As I explained, the procurement module, management module, and the HRM management module are products that came out of IFMS 1, and the rollout, call it the pilot, was in both these two departments, Treasury and DPSA. But the key, and what you're saying is important, that we have to map out the key moving forward in terms of rolling out this thing through to 2021. And I think what our presentation lacks, and I think it's mainly work of a steering committee, is to how then do you as the committee see work between now and 2021 and various gates that you should be seeing and be holding us accountable for in terms of rollout and implementation, so that we don't come two months before 2021 and say, sorry, we cannot meet the target. It will be the worst thing that will happen to us if we are not able to meet this deadline. So whatever we do, we have to, and we should actually even come to you to say, it looks like we cannot meet, and then we must tell you the reasons why, and tell you that, or also come to you and say, we are definitely going to meet the 21, we are on track, and because we have perfected some steps and some process. But I would ask Chair for Pillar to talk to the proof of concept issue that you mentioned, and the process, the current process that will get us to 21, because that's something that I think IFMS team is managing very closely. The ICT works. ICT works. Yes, Chair. It is an important thing. As we indicated last, and I indicated in my own opening statements earlier, that the complex nature of this project and the issues that emanated from IFS 1 and to IFMS 2 were not just as easy to manage in terms of the, and I carefully said it was a legal settlement that was entered into with ICT Works, including the contract. And maybe through Pillar, what we need to do is as we move along this process, because the SCOPA is focused and is interested in this matter, rightly so, by the way, that at some point we should make available that contractual arrangement so that we see how we can untangle ourselves out of it in a way that is above board and not be seen to be, and if it means, and it's something that we've internalized, Chair, especially with the AG process that unfolded insofar as ICT Works is concerned. Do we enter into a new contract with them? Do we terminate and let's deal with it in court? And how do we? Because clearly the contract says, the arrangement says, and we looked at it, we will have to find work for them. And that's why I said, you know, in a way I said it,
And that's why I didn't even beat about the bush. We have to find related work. That's why they do CSD work. And it's not, and you cannot blame them. And because they are there waiting for work, and they are saying, we want to do work, we have got an obligation, or else just clear us out. And again, it will be the worst fruitless expenditure that will ever be under my reign, and I wouldn't want it to happen. So ICT works is something that I think we are seized with the issue on an ongoing basis, especially including with the AG, because the financial year end is here. Are we going to get the same note and qualification in terms of what we have demonstrated as process? So it's something that I guess we'll have to, Laura, come back to the committee on in the form of writing. Now, this is the second point. In terms of work on ICT works, our future, the contract, what it says, the draft contract that we try to strike with them, and what so that the committee can be safe to the matter, and the committee can assist us in taking that further. Chair, it is normal that any new person who comes will be, I try to be a broom in some of the things I do. I told management, the treasury, that because I've been around the system for a while, and it's easy for, and there are things that finally, because I'm now DG, I'm able to just stop or accelerate and so on. And any one of us will have our own views in terms of how we take certain things forward. I've indicated that I've got a challenge, and the example that we give to today to you is that I'm unable to beef up the internal audit function more than what it is now because I don't have money. But you found that what comes through my in tray is either a contract, 10 million rand contract, that either I'm extending, some work maybe could be work that we do in municipalities, financial management support here and there. And these are contracts that are good, that have to happen. We're spending 10 million, for instance, on a tender, 3-year tender, to do our, what do you call it, retail bonds and things, you know. And I'm saying to the team, guys, it cannot be business as usual in the treasury. I will refuse to, instead of 10 million, I will put it at 4 million. And this is a clear real case example. Retail bond savings is important. South Africans must, you know, it's a product of the treasury that you must, savings approach and savings culture in the treasury that are in the government in the country that we must change. Am I just going to sign off and say 10 million over 4 years or 5 years? No. Let it be 4 million, cut the project, cut the size of the advert, etc. and so on, because I want to use the other 6 million for something else. Now, it's a new broom trying to do things differently, because that million can patch somewhere. Now, with the project management office, I would have maybe approached the same way and say, do I cancel contracts? What are the legal implications? What are the penalties? Do I let these contracts lapse? Yes, let them lapse. I'm not renewing because I want to approach IFMS differently in terms of its management. I think I can do it internally if I strengthen some of the costs. Because the PMO office, rightfully so, the choices made before was that. And then you saw in the 54 audit findings, because it was a good signal for me to say, should the PMO take minutes? And there was an invoice, if you remember, of 12 million to one company there. That was, and I looked at it and said, I'm not going to pay this amount for someone to do this, to streamline processes. Pillars, maybe two or three other people can do it internally. I'm saving. So it is not how you are looking at it. I'm looking at it in a way that first cost efficiency savings, stretching that rent that we have in the IFMS budget to ensure that we can achieve more with less. So my approach to the project is more than, can we do it differently? How do we use internal audit for other things? How do we streamline processes? Because there are processes. Finance, that they fully fledged finance department in the National Treasury under the CFO. That should check the contract. It cannot be a project management office that should check payment against contracts. It can be a junior person in the form of a finance officer in the department of the CFO. So it is those kind of things that I'm putting in place, and I'm entrenching in the system for the system to really look at things differently And as I say, I mean, a new broom always want to be, you know, felt, and obviously I'm doing that here and there, but it's for good reasons. So it's not that things were not necessarily scattered, but the choices made were of a particular nature. So I'm just choosing to do it a bit different, and I think it will stretch that back any further, because especially in a period of squeezed resources. And then, Chair, as you know, my background is being a budget analyst all my life in the Treasury. So, you know, that immediately, when I look at a budget and spending and revenues and cut, I just see how best can we stretch that rent for the benefit of the work that we do and such. Maybe Pilar can just take us through some of the key technical questions that the Chair asked around the project itself and the timelines, and whether, you know, a proof of concept is just a good for such a huge, big project. Thank you.
Okay, Chair. If I may give you a view of where we are in as far as the project is concerned, I will speak to many legs here from the work that Oracle is doing. Yes, it has not been an easy transition since September last year. So tough decisions with the support of the DG indeed were taken. Where there was non-performance in certain service providers, we've taken those tough decisions to move those service providers in the IFMS2 space. So that was done very consciously and with the spirit of making sure that we get the required results at a very speedily pace. So at the moment, we have agreed that those service providers, the ICT works, we will sign them to the generic services work elsewhere in the department. So that has been the spirit of when we started in September. Yes, we believe that this is an intellectual property of Oracle. So they understand their methodologies, their tool set much better than their partners would do that. So contractually, part of their master agreement, there is an addendum that caters for them to render consulting services work. We have brought them on board the project. They have kick-started, I think, in November last year. Yes, we are in the process, if I can be specific, of developing a project strategy at the moment, together with other blueprinting artifacts like your developing of the operating model and the roadmap for the implementation, your current ICT strategy in government, your current target solution architecture. So if I can put it in layman's terms, I can say we are in a process of throwing a house plan, if I were to use an analogy of building a house. We are still putting a design, a blueprint on paper blueprint, which we are planning to complete it by the end of June 2018. So that's when now...
Meaning that all along we've been working without a house plan.
We've been working with... In fact, the person who were assigned to do the house plan, it's a KPI that was never achieved. Hence, there is a reflection of a variance in expenditure. So we've accepted that they did not deliver in that space.
Who are those people?
It's ICT works.
You gave them work and they didn't deliver.
They did not deliver.
So didn't they breach their your legal settlement with them? Because as the DG said, you had a settlement that said they must be given work. You gave them work. They failed to deliver.
That was a consensus. Because part of the work they were contracted to was the design of IFMS and generic services. But seemingly on the other legs, they did not perform well. But on others, they did perform. So a consensus decision was reached to say, where you are performing, continue delivering those generic services. But where there is non-performance, please be excluded.
So they will continue delivering those generic services to when? Is it to reach that amount of 300 million or... Do you have a contract that is for 3 years or 4 years? Or
in terms of the contract, it was for a period of 2 years, which is ending now, in November 2018.
Okay, continue.
So that's...
Just to add, I mean, that's why I said internally we've been seized. I use the word seized to the matter.
Yeah.
Because I'm of the view that we should not target the 383 million. It will be irresponsible of us to say, because of the court legal settlement, we have to get to 383. Because then you'll pay them for doing nothing. You'll pay them for work that is not properly conceptualized, etc., etc. So that's why I was saying it is important where I'm sitting, that we come to you properly with saying, here's the contract, here's our thinking, here's the draft arrangement, here's the work that we think they should be doing, and help each other. And that's why I said earlier, before Pillar came in, help each other to unlock, with obviously your support and others, in including in the steering committee, to unlock this quagmire that we're in with, insofar as the legal agreement is concerned. It's not an agreement that says you are doing very well, carry on, and we want you to be in IFMS 2. It was a legal settlement that reduced our exposure from 800 million to 300 million. So in doing that, then we're in the process of working around how do we then legitimately take them forward to 2021.
Just a minute. Yes?
DG, I want you to sustain yourself, even in words. You said to us in your document, we have sorted out all the internal arrangements. We should be confident with the process. Now that he is going to and fro with you, more questions are beginning to come up. It then nullifies the statement that you made initially, that you have sorted out the internal arrangements. I would have been comfortable when you have stick to the arrangement that says you comment last and you go and clean your house and allow the DM to come in and you close the meeting. But the more you ask for Pillar to come, you must allow other members to pounce on what he's saying, because he's the implementer and you are in bricks and he is telling us the truth. But if you want to turn the meeting around, continue doing this to and fro, and we'll dance along with you. We're good dancers, and we perform very well on the floor. But if you wouldn't want us to dance with you, transfer it back to the chairperson, don't chair, and overchair yourself. You're going to run into problems. Ask the chairperson to allow you and Pillar to go and sort out what the question is. That's the most relevant question. And the most pointing question is that, when does the contract end? And Pillar is now beginning to unravel that whole thing, that there's nothing that he has in-house. And when he says he doesn't have anything, it means there's no, we've been misled as Parliament. I'm persuading you, as a gentleman, Honorable, allow the chairperson to finish the meeting and go and sort out your house.
All right. Gentlemen, Honorable.
Chair, just a concern from our side.
Yeah.
And once again, this comes down to the entire thing, and this is like Groundhog Day, just repeating again from the last time we met. Clearly, RCT works don't have capacity. That's why you've had to take them off this work and put them on something else. So the question that has to be asked is who assessed the capacity in the first place? And who made the decision, whether it was a person or a structure, that they had the capacity to do this work? And has that person been dealt with from a disciplinary point of view? And if you spent money on them in the meantime, getting no value for money, has that person been chased for civil recovery of the money that they had a part in losing? Has that consequence management happened? You can't bring somebody in to build a house, and then they half build it, and it half falls over, and then you pay them, and then whoever appointed them just walks away and says, well, I'm sorry, I made a mistake. Can't happen like that.
Can I make a request, comrade? DG, you had initially said let's allow you to bring forth some information, and then we could then interact with that information. And I think from where you are sitting, I can hear you saying you said you want to disentangle yourself out of that situation with the help of everybody, including ourselves. So I would imagine that getting the information
will be for us to say, these are our views, this is what we think might happen to assist you out of that situation. So on that one, I would say, please, let's get the information and we can engage further.
So in as far as where the project is, I've just made an analogy that we are still in the paper blue printing stages at the moment, which we are planning to complete by June.
I hope you fully appreciate what it means this night.
Correct.
That all along we've been having this thing going, but with no plan.
Okay.
It's pure madness, to say the least.
Yeah.
No. It's not something you said. I'm just saying we don't want this to be lost. That you could start a project without a blueprint. A
blueprint, yeah.
You know, So I don't want that part to be lost. I would like that it must sit on your shoulders as you move along.
Okay.
All right, continue. I don't want this meeting to be collapsed.
Chair, can I come in? You initially suggested that the DG must bring information.
No, I'm talking about ICT work.
Mm.
That contract. Now, the point he's making is that the blueprint for the project is not there. It will only be concluded in June. And I'm saying we cannot allow that to pass without emphasizing to them that how do you start a project without...
Chair, exactly. These are some of the issues that we are raising. And at the time, maybe you did not understand what we were talking about. Because it was very clear that the DG, in his response, and even in the presentation, he made broad statements. And now that we are drilling into the issues, you then understand that some of the issues that the DG thought that he has covered, they are not covered. And I thought in your summary, you were then saying, let them bring information so that we interrogate that information. That is why I'm saying it should be detailed information.
Okay.
So that when we zoom into this thing, we get exactly what we are talking about.
Okay. That's fine. Tila?
Okay, now we understand that there was never a blueprint in place.
Don't understand it. Yeah. It's far much more serious than just understanding it.
Okay.
Maybe talk to my last question around payment so I can give the deputy minister. Otherwise, we're going to start afresh with the meeting. Payment.
Okay, in terms of payment, yes, processes, I think DG has alluded to that. We have strengthened some processes where we felt that there might have been some irregularities. Those payments have been put on hold pending the outcome of the forensic investigation. So that's where we are at the moment.
Okay. No, that's fine. Let me appreciate this discussion and hand over to the deputy minister. And I'm not trying to complicate your life, but just know that we're having a discussion this morning about PIC. We'll come to it, because not all that glitter is gold. Half the story has never been told. I think that's a song by Peter Tosh. Yeah. So we'll be coming to that. But anyway, for now, let me hand over to you, comrade. Just a minute. Uncle Ross?
Thanks for your indulgence. If I can just ask one small question and before the minister responds, because for me this is critical. Unfortunately, I was just out of the room, not to have an heart attack, to know that we're still in the founding stages of the IM, of the system. And what would the consequences be if a committee like SCOPA decides that, or make the recommendations that the system should be completely aborted, that we start afresh? Because it's coming from 2005. We're more than 10 years down the line. We see that there's no design. We see that we're still in the early planning stages, and it's certainly not on. And I think the minister should also respond to that.
Okay, well, that's fine. Comrade Deputy Minister.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. Maybe let me start with that one. There is a process we'll have to engage as minister in interacting with the administration. We can only answer that question based on what comes out of that process. It's a process I'm going to raise now as I respond. I thought I wanted to say, Honourable Chair, I won't be long. I just want to say I'm very grateful for the clinical interaction that has taken place here. And the more the interaction went on, and I said to myself, if Treasury can't align with this level of clinical interaction, we aren't worth the salt we claim to be. That's the point I wanted to make, because I've been listening to all the questions. Treasury is a department that must deal with those questions easily, more than any other department. However, what I'm going to raise is that I think the ministry should be able immediately after this asked the DG and the team to present before the ministry the audit of all the questions that has been raised here, just the total audit, and then translate that to a plan of action that's going to be done about those questions. And I think in a short space of time, the ministry must have an idea where this thing is supposed to go. And that's the first critical concrete intervention that will ever take place. And I think just to deal with that, we must be clear probably just on the audit of questions this week that must be done, because we are not innovating the questions. The questions have been established. And then probably engage the administration on how then in a well-articulated plan the response is going to be, where each question is an answer in a particular way. I think a plan to deal with those questions is going to be very critical. I think my attitude is that the questions that have been raised are actually saying to Treasury, live up to a Treasury standard. That's a cry in the wilderness. The committee says, you must be our allies. And I'm sure the committee doesn't say, be declared our ally. It says, live in a manner that earns you that status of being an ally. Now, that part is a very difficult one, because it's not declared. How you conduct yourself, you earn the status. I think that's a challenge we're going to face. And the biggest question is that I'm clear in my mind that Treasury is supposed to be the mirror of government in its entirety. Government must look at Treasury and be able to know where its scars are, where its defects are, at a blink of what to call of an eye. Then that obligates Treasury to be that mirror. That's the challenge we're going to face. So it's going to be a tough climb, and I guess we'll have to climb it, because being Treasury, I don't think we have a choice. We must climb that. I can say, Chair, with few days one has been Treasury, there's a lot of potential there. There's a lot of skill there. It's a question of maybe optimizing that skill to deliver things that have been raised. In my history as either MEC or whatever, it's the first time I come to an institution that has got so much skill. Usually in some institutions you start afresh, there's nothing here. There's a lot of resources there. I think the challenge we're going to have is to optimize it, to live with the standards that you are what to call, you are raising. Because the cry is that we must be exemplary. And being exemplary, we must end that. One of the questions I wanted to raise that is going to put it to you that some of the things we will decide them internally. The Treasury must make it its practice that to follow the developments in SCOPA on a regular basis. There must be a mechanism of doing it. Some of the things you don't need to hear them here. In other words, what is called proactive monitoring calls you to go ahead of SCOPA. I think my call is that we must be ahead of SCOPA. We must not follow SCOPA. And I think that is doable. And the other issue I wanted to raise is that there's a critical question that has been raised by the committee about deviations. I think the biggest question is, I think the DG has actually spoken very strongly on that, and I'm with him on that. I think the question that Treasury must answer, to what degree do you tolerate deviations? Where in one area where I was in Gauteng, there was an MEC. I'm sorry, you will fight with me if I keep on using it. Called Jabumlege. It was an MEC for finance. If there's one thing that he did it proactively, was to ensure that once budgets are allocated, the cash flow life is monitored on a regular basis so that when things are not understood, the Treasury intervenes timelessly and asks what is happening here on time. In other words, Treasury doesn't come after, you minimize coming after act. There were beautiful outcomes as a result of that approach. So all I'm saying, I think I have a sense of the outcry of the committee, and I can say to you, the ministry is going to have internal conversation with this capable management. And I want to raise a capable management. We're going to have internal conversation, and very shortly we must be able to come back. At least to say, this is the audit of the things that you think we have raised. It's a turnaround plan in which we think, whether it leads to what you have said, Honorable Member Ross. That to me is a bridge we'll cross when we get there. All I'm saying, there can be no one to debate, in the words of the chair's opening remark, the essence and the overdueness of an integrated government system. There can be no one. The question is, how do you implement it so that it lives up to what to come? Maybe lastly, I just wanted to say, one of the things that we will discuss with the management is the analysis of our systems in its totality. Because a system that depends on an individual is a very weak system. All what you need to do from the DG is his strategic capabilities, his strategic leadership. But there's no way he's going to stop going to breed because the system cannot do what he wants done. That's the challenge that we're going to face. And I think we'll have to do that, move that as fast as possible. Where I'm sitting, the internal audit, as far as I've understood it over here, is that the internal audit is a mechanism for ensuring that it helps each department to live credibly with integrity. That's what the internal audit is supposed to do. And it is only used properly when it is independent, when it acts without fear or favor. Deliberately, as management, you make them to live that life. And I'm saying, those are few remarks, Chair, I wanted to make, and I will actually brief the Minister about this, and I can guarantee you, we've got talent in the department, and I think this is doable. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Comrade Minister. I think we are happy with your approach to the matter, and I think the DG too, as I said, not saying it very lightly, but continue doing that which is right and correct things, because the problem that National Treasury finds itself is that it is always with us. Every time we have a hearing, they send someone, I think from the Office of the Accountant General. It all depends what they do, what they report going back, and what do they do with whatever feedback they got here. It is always with us, helping us to shine the torch on others. Now, who shines the torch on National Treasury? that can bring about complacency. So thank you very much. Let's keep it to that. And DG, let's just get the information, and we will also make our input in terms of how we think some of these things can be unraveled. Comrades, thanks very much. Tonight, 6 o'clock, ESCOM. Uncle Ross, you are the lead person. We're meeting here. All right. Comrade Deputy Minister, come, touch my blood. Sure.
Thank you.